Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Things are a little bit back to normal now. Had a great visit with family over the last 3 days, 4 days, 3.5 days. And got a regular show for you this evening. Hope you've got a lot to talk about. I do. Looking forward to getting the conversation started up again. Great show, Mark Levine. Great job, great work, my brother. And of course, we come to expect that kind of work from Mark Levine. May very well be the smartest man doing liberal talk, and I mean anybody, any network, anywhere. So, you know, just, you know that, you know, that's the kind of thing you get by virtue of the time you share with the horn. So, I don't know. Starting up this evening, a dozen different directions we can go in. Now, you all know, of course, that John McCain doesn't know how many houses he owns. It's just charming. My friends, I think I have 7 McMansions. Oh, wait, it's 10. You know, that's the nice thing about being working class. You never forget how many houses you have. Because it's generally the one you wake up in every day. Those poor, poor, poor multimillionaires. Waking up every day, not sure which mansion they're in. Not knowing where their head's going to hit the pillow that night. Whether it'll be in mansion number one, mansion number two, mansion number three. You know, I don't think I could stand it. I don't think I could stand it. It's just, I feel so forlorn, so utterly sad for the uber wealthy. It really does. It makes you tear up a little bit, doesn't it? Poor old 894. Can you know, he's confused and addled enough as it is. And he gets up every day and, my friends, what mansion am I in today? So yeah, that's a little moment of silliness on his part. But you know, the one that just gets all over me. By the way, just in case you were wondering, the for-profit media, they say that it's not a, let's see, The Atlantic, a guy named Mark Ambiter. The word John McCain means a lot of different things, but rich isn't one of them.
Oh, really?
Okie dokie. Then there's Howie Kurtz at the Washington Post. The assumption that McCain's personal wealth makes him insensitive to the struggling economy is highly debatable. Yeah, okay, Howie. So what does it mean when he doesn't know how much a gallon of gas costs? Or screw the gallon of gas when he doesn't know how much a gallon of milk costs, Howie. But as we know, as we've known for a while, the for-profit media is leaping to the defense of McCain on this business about him not knowing how many houses he owns. Let's see. In the Washington Post, Paul Kane said it was a manufactured flap and not a huge deal. Here's his quote. At this point in his national political career, McCain is not going to be transformed into a super-rich elitist. He's just not. The voters won't buy it. Huh? The voters have already decided that a guy who has never actually had to hold down a job in his life, who has sucked at the public teat in one form or another all of his life, is not an elitist? This guy never had a day in his life when he was able to actually compete in the job market. All right, that's really what it boils down to. Legacy admission to Annapolis, legacy strings pulled, whatever, to get him into pilot school because nobody wanted him behind the wheel of a so much as a garbage scow, so they'll make a Roger Ramjet of him. Crashed four jets before he finally wound up crashing one into a pond in Vietnam. Got back from Vietnam, back from the prisoner of war camp, and immediately went into the politics dodge. The man has never held an honest job in his life. The man has never turned in a resume. The man has never filled out a job application. And he's not an elitist. How? Come on. But beyond that, it's the stuff that John Fox and I were talking about last night on the horn section that bears hitting again tonight, because some of you might not have heard the horn section. This question asked by this bigot about, you know, following McCain to the great gates of hell, that thing. First of all, the lady is indeed a bigot. But it's the answer that he gave, a very pat answer, about whether or not there would be a reinstitution of the draft. I'm sure you've probably heard it before, but you know what? By God, it's worth hearing again. Now, bear in mind, it's a long question from a really bigoted woman. But it's the closer. It's the end. It's where she ties off the loop, and how John McCain responds that really that made the little short little hairs on the back of my neck stand on end. Here we go.
Yes, Senator McCain, I truly hope you get the opportunity to chase bin Laden right to the gates of hell and push him in, as you stated on your form. I do have a question, though. The disabled veterans, especially in this state, have horrible conditions. Their medical is substandard. They drive 4 hours one way to Albuquerque for a simple doctor's appointment, which is often canceled. Our VA hospital is dirty, it's understaffed, it's running on maximum overload. The prescription medicines are 10 years behind standard medical care. We have 700 claims stacked up at the VA office in Albuquerque. Some of them are 10 and 7 years old waiting to be processed. In the meantime, these people are homeless. My son is an officer in the Air Force. I'm a vet. and I was raised in a military family. And I think it's a sorry state of affairs when we have illegal aliens having a Medicaid card that can access specialist, top physicians, the best of medical, and our vets can't even get to a doctor. And these are the people that we tied yellow ribbons for and Bush patted on the back.
Here it comes.
If we don't reenact the draft, I don't think we'll have anyone to chase Bin Laden to the gates of hell.
There you go.
Ma'am, let me say that. I don't disagree with anything you said, and thank you. And I'm grateful for your support of all of our veterans.
There you got it. I mean, could it be any plainer? I agree with everything you've said. Now, either old 894 don't hear so good, or old 894, who wants to be in Iraq for 100 years, old 894, wants to send your kid. He ain't going to Iraq for 100 years. He may not have 4 years left in him. Shoot, his face may rot off before the next two at the current rate. Right? But I tell you what, if you know somebody who is 18 years old, if you know somebody 18 years old that isn't going to vote, isn't registered, who says, well, you know, who cares? You better tell them that it's their butt on the line now. John McCain likes war because John McCain likes people who give him money who make humongous profits off war. Are we clear? John McCain is a war whore. I don't think there's any getting around it. John McCain is poison. John McCain is the problem. And, you know, the bigotry of the, well, there's all them illegal aliens and they're taking away our med. The illegal aliens are not going to the VA medical centers. But, you know, that's how it is with a right winger. They never are particularly interested in, you know, the facts. But at the end, we can't follow Osama bin Laden to the gates of hell without a draft. Ma'am, I agree. You got kids? Look at your 16-year-old. Hey, Pumas! You got any youngins? Look at them. Now, you got sons? Because they have to register for the draft to even be able to go to college. Or get student loans. Or grants. Hey, Pumas. You still think there's no difference between Obama and McCain? Might want to think that one over again. Or not, I guess. Tell you what, it gives me the cold chills. We don't have a lot of work here in the up the holler where I am. Walmart and the mines. That's pretty much it. But fortunately, a draft could provide lots and lots of employment opportunities for graduating high school seniors. I hope to goodness that the Obama campaign will jump on this and will jump on it seriously so as to help those young people understand what it will mean for them to either stay home or go and vote for old 894. But it's going to be the job, doing that is going to be the job of the Obama camp. And it's also going to be the job of you and me, parents, liberals, progressives, Democrats, you know, decent human beings. But those are the only people going to be doing that job. The for-profit media actually call John McCain on that business. Ain't going to happen. Again, I referenced a little bit earlier the Atlantic's Mark Ambender. Does McCain favor a draft? Nope. That's what he said. Said liberals are having a conniption. And then I guess Olbermann last night asked NBC political director Chuck Todd about it. And Todd said he was going to, quote, give McCain the benefit of the doubt. Here's the full quote. Let me just go there and give McCain the benefit of the doubt as to what he might have thought he was agreeing to, which is that he has been a big advocate on the national service front, as has Obama, as sort of mandatory service in some form that you see a lot of politicians take, so it is possible. What? I mean, did the guy show up on Olbermann's show with, like, the robe with the moon and the stars on it and the pointy little hat and the magic eight ball? Because I think to say what Chuck Todd said, you kind of have to have all that. That's the accoutrements of the gig, the racket. Let's give McCain the benefit of the doubt. Screw that. I'm tired of giving McCain the benefit of the doubt. What in the world earns John McCain the benefit of the doubt? Nobody gives Barack Obama the benefit of the doubt, by God. You can bet on that. Oh, listen, he's an elitist. He said discouraged white people cling to guns and religion. Hey, you hear that? He's an elitist.
Newsflash to the for-profit media. The people he was talking about do that. And it ain't elitist to say so.
God knows, I'm a hillbilly elitist, but that means that I actually am one of those people he was talking about, except that, you know, I'm not. Jesus. Now to November. Uphill, foot in bucket. That's how it's going to be. That means we got to work three times as hard. Welcome to the program.
Bob. Oh, my God. It's Sandra. How
hey,
you?
Sandra.
Listen, you know what? Yikes. Okay. That's all I have to say about that. That is so frightening. And the thing is that, you know, you always have to look at what these people say. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what he's saying. He's saying there's going to be a draft, which I thought about the whole time his ass been up there, and it just slipped out or it came out, and the media is trying to tell us that he didn't say it. This is what's killing me.
Well, remember the appearance in Florida? I think we may have even talked about it, Sandra, from a couple of weeks ago, where he was wearing makeup in the middle of the day because he looked so pale and dead.
Yeah.
And he was asked a softball question. You know, the Senator McCain, do you really love kitties or do you really, really love kitty cats? And I'm sorry, my friend, could you repeat the question? Well, there was no could you repeat the question with the lady in New Mexico.
No, it wasn't anything like that. And what's really disturbing is, you know, this, to me, I don't understand. I'm trying to figure out where the hell I'm living because this needs to be on the front page. You know, McCain is for a draft. Yet what we're being told is that, oh, no, he didn't mean that. That's not true.
Right, because the for-profit media is going to do his bootlicking.
Right, but the thing is that don't you find this really scary?
I can't define it as really scary. The only really, Sandra, the only way I can define it is it's the sort of thing that when I take my shoes off and get ready to climb into bed at night before I turn the light off, I put my forehead in the palms of my hands. And, you know, I'd never do that over the 6'7" Arab dude with the portable dialysis machine somewhere in the cave suburbs of the tribal areas of Pakistan. I don't do that. But with McCain, I do that because I got a little boy here that McCain would love to see blown into his constituent parts in some foolish, fool's errand, stupid-ass war in a place that we have no business.
Well, see, this is the thing. I mean, this is what's so serious. It's like, this man is a war monger, and he seems to be hell-bent on letting us all know what's coming up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, he ain't hiding.
He ain't hiding. This is what I'm saying. And the press is no longer stenographers. They're also telling us that what I'm hearing ain't what's being said. It's just
At this point in time, the for-profit media, Sandra, has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the McCain for President, Inc.
Oh, yeah. No, because all of a sudden he's not rich. $5 million a year is what he considers rich. I mean, it's hourly with this freak.
Well, did you see this business about some people are poor even if they're billionaires?
No, listen, you know what? No, what's this?
This is the Politico interview that he gave. You know, Mike Allen, that guy that asked the real hard questions of George Bush.
Yeah, that guy. God, yeah. That whole website. Anyway.
So he said, my friends, I define rich in other ways besides income. Some people are wealthy and rich in their lives and their children and their ability to educate them. Others are poor if they're billionaires.
Oh, you know what? Not coming from some a-hole that don't know how many goddamn homes he owns. Come on, man.
Oh, I know. See, and that's that whole George Bailey at the end of It's a Wonderful Life. You know, George Bailey is the richest man in town because he's got friends. You know what? Bug spray.
And not only that, that's that whole money can't, you know, money isn't everything.
Yeah, and I don't buy into that anymore.
That they feed people who don't have it. You know,
usually, anybody that gets around to telling you that money can't buy you happiness is somebody who has a lot of it and appears to be pretty damned happy.
Well, yeah, no, it's just a load. And for him, you know, and it's just sort of like, no, I can't even believe that we're being reduced to that crap again. But what's really disturbing, you know, like I was listening to the guy James, I mean, yeah, those polls, I mean, I don't know what the hell, maybe you have some insight on what the hell Obama's doing, but it ain't working.
I can't hold it against the guy for going to see his Grammy in Hawaii, all right? I just won't do it.
No, I don't hold it against that, but those pictures of him swinging about in the waves.
Yeah, because, right, because you can't look at those without hearing da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and, you know, book them, Barack. Murder one.
Saddleback. What was that, man?
The saddle. Mark Levine and I had have a running debate on whether that was smart. I think it was not smart because there's, you know, that's one of those things out of the 23rd Psalm, Sandra. You know, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. That's what that was. And you, you know, in those circumstances, if you get up and walk away without, you know, your sacroiliac spouting dagger blades, you got to call that a win. But I guess they thought he was, you know, showing that he was not afraid to talk the evangelical talk.
I just thought the whole thing was just bizarre.
It was a fraud.
And that horrible war, he gave me the heebies. I'm sorry. I'm that guy. Ew. I don't know. There's something about him. It's sort of what's my favorite meth smoking queer pastor?
Reverend Hager, the Crystal Methodist.
Yeah, there seems to be some little. I don't know. I looked at that wine guy and I thought, I don't know about you, fool. You don't look right.
Yeah, and he's writing some book about porpoises driving. Yeah, a porpoise-driven life.
You know, I've known people who have either had clutching that book for dear life. Yuck. Anyway.
Well, it was certainly a purpose that drove Rick Warren's life.
Well, no, but
he's a billionaire out of it.
Oh yeah, aren't they all? But it seemed like it was a bit of a setup, or I don't understand what Obama thought he was going to get out of it. You know, he's still trying to suck up to these people.
Well, I think there were multiple levels at work, Sandra. One of them was to sit down and make nicey with a nice, fat, pasty-faced, doughy, white evangelical preacher to sort of take some of the sting out of Reverend Wright. See, I can talk about Christianity. You see what you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, but he wasn't dealing with stars. I would have rather seen that. Just
no, I want to see a steel cage death match on that one, but
comical, just for comical relief, man.
But then the fact that the first question he asked McCain when he comes out was, you know, were you comfortable in your cone of silence? That was code again. The whole thing, Sandra, was code. Oh dear, have we lost you, Sandra? I think we did. Yeah, it was all code. Insofar, but you know what was going on. You know that McCain wasn't there. You know that the McCain campaign said, well, he didn't hear any of the answers. No, McCain didn't. McCain's lackeys did. I mean, this is the same crowd who brought you the square box on George Bush's back, okay? Let's have a little perspective, if you please. Hopefully, maybe Sandra will dial back in the interim. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
Got a little more information about the deer saddleback doohickey.
Oh, yes?
Another touching story that McCrazy told was about how his wife went over to Bangladesh and into that part of the world and met Sister Teresa, or Mother Teresa.
Yeah, because she doesn't have any sisters.
And came back, yeah, she's got at least two. And she came back with a baby, and that became his daughter. There's only one small problem.
You mean the one that the Bush campaign called around South Carolina saying, you know he's got one of those babies, don't you? You mean that baby?
Yeah, that baby. But the problem with the story is Cindy McCain, and actually none of the McCains has ever met Mother Teresa.
But that's okay. They can just say that they did.
That's another lie on top of the many, many, many piles of lies.
Well, because lying is what they do.
Yes, compulsive lie.
There's something about writing making a crucifix in the dirt or something. Did you catch that one?
Yeah, that's pulled straight out of the Gulag Archipelago by Alexander Solzhenitsyn.
Yeah, right. Okay, yeah. Yeah. But McCain did that.
Straight line.
Back when Solzhenitsyn was playing on the defensive line of the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Right.
Got it. Check.
Yeah. And here's something that if somebody's listening who hasn't quite made up his mind, might want to think about. McCain, when he was in prison, he talked. He told, they demanded who his squadron was, and he gave them the football line. Never mind which one, he gave them a football line.
Right.
So how come, if he could do that and get away with it, how come he gave them the real attack plan that the United States was using?
Again, by his own admission. By his own admission.
By his own admission, and thereby got a whole bunch more pilots and crews killed and shot down.
No, we can't answer. We can't. That's not. He's a war hero, you know. We can't ask that question.
Well, McCain is reacting like Giuliani reacted, during his campaign. Biden said it perfectly. A noun, a verb, and 9/11. That's all Giuliani was. And McCain is turning out to be a noun, a verb, and POW.
Yeah. And on the one hand, because we're liberals, because we're progressive, because we're Democrats, in other words, decent people, Susan, it's hard, again, on the one hand, to be critical of him for that, because those 5 years really probably did pretty much define him. I mean, my own father, and I'm sure yours, because you've talked about him as well, was defined by the time they spent in the South Pacific.
And it took me the better part of 30 years to get out the fact, get out of him the fact that he had to dive into burning oil. He did not talk about it. My husband went through World War II. To this day, he won't talk about it.
But some people, like McCain, have to do it because it's the one moment, it is the one period of time that has given an otherwise devoid life some level of clarity and some level of definition, and it also becomes the mythical basis upon which they can construct what? They can construct a reason to live? Because, you see, John McCain can't think about when he came home from that POW camp, because then he has to confront realities about how he treated his wife.
Yeah.
He can't think about that because then he has to confront realities about how he wouldn't even take care of the medical needs of his wife and left it up to Ross Perot to do it.
Yeah. Just to show you that Cindy is no paragon of family values. For everybody took her at her word when she said she was the only child of this billionaire businessman.
Yeah, not quite.
Not by a long shot. She's got one blood half sister who was rather upset to be informed that her younger sister doesn't even acknowledge her existence.
Yeah, because what? Daddy left the two sisters $10,000 and left sweet Cindy everything else?
Yep.
And, of course, the stepsis is also a Democrat, too, isn't she?
Right. And, yeah.
By the way, a little bit of breaking news.
Oh.
Just rolling in from our pals over at Citizens for Legitimate Government. And I don't have all the details yet. Headline, McCain office is sent, you know, I don't know how Bruce Ivins did this from the grave. McCain office is sent white powder threat. Denver campaign office receives letter containing a threat and an amount of white powder. John McCain's campaign office in Denver, Colorado, has received a letter containing a threat and an amount of white powder in it. A McCain campaign spokesman told CBS News, City of Denver is at a heightened security level as the Secret Service and other officials prepare for the yada, yada, yada. Lest we get distracted from this nugget, McCain unsure how many houses he owns. See, my friends, I was a POW, and they've sent me an envelope with white powder in it. How can I run around counting houses?
First thing that pops into my head?
Yeah.
Where was his campaign staff? And you better fingerprint him.
Oh, sure.
Because I don't for a minute believe somebody sent it to them. If it was sent at all, it was probably sent by his own people.
Wouldn't be surprised, or, you know, I don't know, maybe it was a Ron Paul supporter. Or maybe it was the real anthrax killer they didn't catch, because that's a darned interesting story out there. I don't know if you caught it or not, but what we didn't hear about the FBI's investigation, did you run across this?
Not sure. I know this case is falling apart big time.
Let's see. This from USA Today on Monday. I think it was. Or maybe not. Maybe not. The FBI said Monday that Bruce Ivins, the bioscientist, yada, 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 helped them figure out how to collect the anthrax samples needed for the investigation. In 2002, he submitted a sample that didn't meet those standards. And then the FBI destroyed his sample without testing it. Huh? What? And then he submitted a second sample, one that court papers say was intended to mislead investigators. Oh, okay. So they're mind readers now.
Yeah. Mind readers of a corpse. which right. takes some doing.
His lawyer, Paul Kemp, is still a little bit hot under the collar. Ivins's lawyer. I have nothing but questions. The science, according to many, can only identify a strain of anthrax. If they can identify it, why didn't they act within the last 3 years to arrest Ivins?
Exactly.
So
even if they had heavy-duty suspicions, why was he still working at that lab? They can't answer that.
No, they can't.
Because they're basically trying to hang this on a dead man because he happens to be handy.
Or because maybe, well, this is because I'm all ugly and paranoid. Maybe because the right-winger who did it, they didn't want to catch. They're handy. You got to admit, they're handy. So, yeah. Yeah, be afraid, America. Be very afraid. But like I said, talking to Sandra, I don't get real burned up about the, you know, Bin Laden. But I tell you what, John McCain is beginning to scare the piss out of me.
Welcome to the club. I'm seriously, you know, I would dearly love to be able to have the capacity to leave this country if he gets in office. In fact, I may end up just grabbing some stuff, throwing at the car, tossing.
Kind of, you know, in a way, it kind of reminds me of what a gentleman, I use the term loosely, what a fellow by the name of Hutton Gibson did back during Vietnam.
Head north.
No. He had a very handsome young son named Melvin.
Ah, head for Australia.
And went down under to keep Melvin from having to serve his country in the Vietnam draft. It's worth remembering that kind of stuff. It wasn't all just bearded, love-beaded, wearing hippies heading to Canada.
Unfortunately, I haven't got the capacity to be able to head for Australia.
I don't have the capacity to head for the county line, Susan. That's why this is so important to me. We've got it. We have got to defeat John McCain.
Yeah, because
I don't have any way to hide my son or even my daughters from a McCain draft. And you know what? That does scare me. Because while no one in my family has ever shirked from a duty to defend this nation, going all the way back to the Revolution,
yeah,
I draw a distinction between defending this nation and going and having it out to make sure that somebody's corporate bottom line is either advanced, enhanced, or otherwise protected.
Yeah. Short of sending them up to Canada, there's not much you can do.
I can't send... That's the point, Susan. I can't send anybody to Canada. What am I going to do? Pack his bags or get him a stick and put some belongings in a little red bandana and tie it on there and say, well, hit the road,
yeah,
son.
That's the problem. Yeah, that's the problem. I know I have... my daughter's a teacher. And so she has a job basically anywhere. And I keep telling her, you need to start applying for jobs overseas. And when you do, stay there. And then sponsor me. The only reason she's still here is because she's got a great big German Shepherd dog that's elderly. And so she's going to wait until the dog goes.
That's
her baby.
That's tough. That's tough.
Yeah. But the whole McCain thing is just...
Well, McCain is a tissue of lies, is he not? I mean, that we...
He doesn't exist.
We've got that book, The Real McCain, and we interviewed the author. But the question is, when you strip away all the mythology... How much real McCain is left? I got one of those fun little emails that I enjoy every now and then, a forward of some photographs of a Central American butterfly that's called a glass wing. Beautiful photos. And it's a butterfly with transparent wings. It's a butterfly with no butterfly there. Isn't that what, in the long run, isn't that what we're talking about with John McCain? By the time you strip away the BS and the mythology and the stuff that's not real, he almost disappears, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lobbyist can't come through my door, but 160 of them are running his damn campaign.
He goes from this hotshot, testosterone-laden guy to being mini-me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all of that. They're just...
By the way, one last thing, or not last thing, but another thing that occurred, I just sort of noticed. You remember when we were talking about Dennis Kucinich?
Uh-huh.
And we were talking about some of the stupid realities of American presidential politics. One of the things that got said, wow, you know, he's not tall enough.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, he looks like an elf.
Do you know how tall John McCain is?
No.
5'7", in heels.
Oh, good God, you're kidding me.
Yeah, really, he's, and that's why they have to shoot him at different angles. By shoot, I mean with a camera. That's why the camera at the Saddleback Bunko the hokum stupid thing.
Yeah, he was always photographed from below at a kind of an angle.
And in a tighter focus. I'm surprised they didn't give him a pillow to sit on so that he would appear to have equal height to that charlatan Rick Warren. If you go back and you look at the video, you'll find that Obama is shot at a longer distance than McCain.
Yeah. What I want to find out is, okay, during these debates that they've got coming up, tell me, is John going to have his very own box to stand on to make him as tall as...
They may not stand him on a box, but they will darn sure make him seem to be exactly the same height as Barack Obama. So, you know, it's because the debates are going to be pageants. You know, interesting you would this would come up because you know the regard that I hold our dear friend Eugene Finnerman, the world's most internet's most brilliant satirist. This is rather an interesting little date in history, Susan.
Uh-huh.
This is the anniversary of the first of the Lincoln-Douglas debates. Now it's hard to forget that the last time the Lincoln-Douglas debates were mentioned on Fox, they showed a picture of Frederick Douglass.
Yes.
But Stephen Douglass was a munchkin.
Yeah.
And Abraham Lincoln was, of course, considerably taller, plus the hat. Well, you know, we couldn't have that. We couldn't have that. Among other things, one of the things that Eugene points out is that each of the seven debates, there were seven debates regarding a Senate seat in Illinois. Each of the seven debates lasted 3 hours. And was with regard to only one question. I know that we don't have an American electorate with for the most part, with the attention span for something like that. But the question you have to ask is, do we have any politicians who could stand up under that kind of heat?
I don't know. I'd love to find out.
So, don't expect anything out of the debates because, you know, we saw John Kerry literally hand George Bush his ass. We saw Al Gore hand George Bush his ass. No questions. I mean, it was one of those, down goes Frazier, one of those kind of moments, you know?
Yeah.
And next day, there's the for-profit media. Well, you know, I think it was a draw.
Uh-huh.
What? How? But it's what we've come to expect. Susan, have yourself a wonderful night, all right?
There is one other thing I wanted to mention.
Yes.
Last. Sidney plans on naming his vice presidential pick on his birthday, which is the anniversary of Katrina.
Oh, that should be fun. Or not. Well, I'm resigned to the fact that Obama will likely name Tim Kaine, and we, yay. It's like that little moment from Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where it says, and there was much rejoicing, and you see the little animated sticks going up and down, yay.
I want somebody else.
I want a pony, but
yeah.
Apparently we don't get one. Susan, thanks a lot.
No problem. Love, Agnes.
All right, thanks. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And let's keep this rolling along, see what's happening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Bob.
Hey, Luke, what's up, brother?
I thought I'd just call you from work since last night. I know everybody tried to call in at the last minute, so I thought I'd call in at the
program. Well, last night was a rerun, but, yeah, that is usually what happens.
I know. But you know how that goes. We're all reruns. For Monday night, that's what I meant, sorry.
Oh, sure.
What other night? You were live that night. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, do we think that Obama's going to follow what all the media is saying, or do we think he's got somebody totally out of left field?
He's going to Richmond tomorrow.
Kaine?
Yeah.
Well, I thought it wasn't until Saturday until he made the announcement.
Well, the announcement may be Saturday, but why else would you go to Richmond on Friday?
To let somebody off.
Well, okay. I was thinking, you know, maybe to if it's not going to be Kaine, to deliver a lovely parting gift,
Well, you never know. It could be he may end up.
At this point, Luke, I gotta tell you, the short list is not impressing me.
No, it's not.
Biden would be acceptable.
Red light Biden, yes, indeed.
But on the other hand, bye. Or
by is acceptable. It's just one of those things. It's like the same thing with Kaine. It's like, say, the only person in the Democratic Party that got less personality than is Jack Reed.
But even Jack Reed, okay, he would bring some credentials.
Yeah. It's one of those things. It's like I was hoping he was going to go with governor. I was actually thinking of Sebelius.
Well, I mean, that may be part of the point with Kaine. Kane's a governor.
I know, but you know what I mean.
And he's a safe governor because he can just turn right around and go back to being governor.
That too is true.
I don't think Virginia law requires him to resign his seat.
So we'll just wait and see. It's just one of those things. It's fun watching the media absolutely just turn themselves inside out trying to figure out who it is.
You know what really, I was thinking about this in the last couple of nights, Luke. You know what really sort of crawls on me about this whole vice presidential thing? We've sold out or given up on or forgotten or whatever what this really means. When a presidential nominee sits down to choose his replacement, and I don't know that this is necessarily the nature of the process that Obama or Clinton or anybody else went through, but the first question you have to ask is, who can I find that will carry on my ideas if I die?
You know, that's what most people forget. That's one of the few best things about Lyndon Johnson. He didn't believe in all of Kennedy's ideas, but he carried them out.
And some of the, and for that matter, the other Johnson, Andrew.
Yeah.
Was trying to at least marginally approach some of Lincoln's ideas for Reconstruction.
Yeah. Cause that's the key to it is you want somebody that for that term will follow what the boss's idea was, playbook was. You know what I mean?
And you know what? Presidents do die in office.
It happens. I hope it doesn't, but you never know. Yesterday had an aneurysm.
Yeah, look at FDR's choice to replace or to put Harry Truman in the VP slot in his final election in 1944.
Yep. You know what I mean? Because like yesterday with the congresswoman, that can happen just like, say, a snap of the finger. You don't know when it could happen to anybody nowadays. You know
right.
what I mean?
And the thing is, I look at...
The person isn't everything anymore.
I look at Evan Bayh, I don't see a president.
No.
I look at Tim Kaine,
I don't see a president. And I do see one in Biden. Matt Rothschild.
The only problem I have with Biden is, and we talked about this before, he loves the sound of his own voice.
Foot and mouth disease?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I mean, he over talks something. Sometimes he could say it in 10 words, he'll spend 200.
Yeah. It's something a lot of us Democrats and liberals and.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
But the other thing is,
they'll also.
Inside of you say, no, no, no.
They'll also hammer him with the plagiarism rap, too, Luke.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's fine. I'm sitting there going, well, let's see. Now, we're up against the fellow who was the adulterer and the bank fraud thief. Now, which one do you think's worse, plagiarizing a line out of something you may have heard, or the fellow who ripped off some people for money?
But, again, there's that, you know, I hate Karl Rove. I loathe him. I despise him. But he did say one thing that made a hell of a lot of sense and I think is ultimately true, at least as regards this whole fight, is that his aphorism, if you're explaining, you're losing.
That's true. That's one of the problems that Obama's almost gotten into. He hadn't, but, you know, it's like I say, that's what I was really proud of when they came out with the group. They had the stuff already ready when Corsi came out with his book. You know, you don't let it sit there. You don't even let it hit the ground. You push it out before it even touches the ground.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing. You got to, you know, it's like this thing right now. It's like, say, on the McCain's houses. I'll keep pushing that. Just keep pushing it. You know what I mean? Don't overly do it, but, I mean, just keep mentioning it.
Yeah. There have been so many shifts, and I'm not trying to be Mr. Negative, but there have been so many Obama slides to the hard right.
I know.
That I felt like we needed somebody that would really, really invigorate the ticket.
Yep.
And that ain't Tim Kaine, and it ain't Evan Bayh, and it's not hardly Joe Biden. And Kathleen Sebelius, you know, I'll give her the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But where was the cup of coffee that was, why not have a cup of coffee with a Russ Feingold?
It would really energize the left.
Or a Jack Reed. Mm-hmm. Or, for that matter, what about a Brian Schweitzer, from Montana?
Mm-hmm.
Even though he's a liquid coal geek.
Yeah.
I
tell you who's still my favorite speaker. Is no longer the mayor of Salt Lake City.
Rocky Anderson. Sure.
I mean, there's somebody, I mean, can you imagine the two of them giving speeches together?
Yeah, yeah. There would be reasons for going with a Brian Schweitzer or who's the senator from Montana, the newbie?
I know who you mean.
Yeah. You want to solidify the West? You want to really make that happen? Sure.
There are a lot of choices out there that you can make. I mean, there's some choices that are totally off.
If not Bill Richardson, what about Ken Salazar?
Yeah.
Now, again, Ken Salazar doesn't exactly get my progressive juices stirring, because I remember him sitting there singing the praises of Torture Boy Gonzalez up one wall and down the other. You know, he was the guy who introduced the nomination to the Senate. And Ken Salazar, a Democrat.
You know, I mean, it's some of those things.
What about a Barbara Boxer? Yeah, not a Dianne Feinstein, but what about a Barbara Boxer?
Yeah.
I mean, there are people who could do this. And, yeah, I have misgivings, of course. I have misgivings about a two-senator ticket.
That's what I mean. That's why I was thinking more along the lines of a governor. You know what I mean? Or like I say, somebody just totally out of the, not even in office right now. You know what I mean? So,
Michigan's Governor Granholm. That would work.
Oh, yeah. You know, it's like I said, there's a whole bunch of choices out there. Like you say, we're getting down to the point where the choices they got left ain't nothing to blow the whistle over.
And that's why I said what I did, Luke, about this question of what does it mean to pick a vice president?
Mm-hmm.
Because it just from what I've read and what I've seen and what I've heard, it would appear that this choice is not being driven by who will carry on the policies and philosophy so much as the political considerations of who can deliver the biggest ice cream cone.
you gotta remember, now, like I say, you know, when Bill picked Al Gore, you remember, everybody said, well, why are you picking him? He's another Southerner right next door to you. You said he's no help to you here and there. It's like, well, yes, he was. Not in the vote per se, but hey, like you say, sometimes the vote ain't everything.
Right, and I have no doubt that Al Gore would have picked up where Bill Clinton left off had something happened to Bill.
Yeah.
So, but you get my meaning then.
Oh yeah. Just like I say, if the person you pick, you know, that you may understand that if you check off this mortal coil, that the next time around they'll run for office. Great, that's what they should be there for. But like I say, at the same time, you want somebody for the rest of this term that's going to take care of what you started. You know, that's going to be the banner. They're going to pick up pick up the flag and wave your flag.
And see, for me, I'm bothered by Tim Kaine because Tim Kaine's a coal whore.
I know.
But more than that, though, Tim Kaine's so-called personal proclivities as a pro-lifer. Let's de-energize another wing of our party. There's a good idea.
You know, it's one of those things you're just kind of going, you know, it's nice to pick somebody, but at the same time, why are you shooting me in the other leg while we're doing it? You know.
Yeah, it's it's bad enough to run uphill with one foot in a bucket. Don't bring me the second one.
Yeah. Did you get that thing I sent you from Alternet about the coal river?
Yes, I did. In fact, I commented extensively on that thread. And you know what? It's been a great, great effort so far. I got a note from our buddy Nick, who told me that the petition signature yesterday crossed the 3,800 mark.
Oh, I'll tell you the one thing that's been bugging me the last couple of days. And you tell me, I'm still thinking, I'm wondering where the shoe's going to drop on this thing with this guy, T. Boone Pickens. There's something in there that just smells wrong.
Well, the T. Boone Pickens has never done a blessed thing in his life that didn't involve him making a boatload of money.
That's what I'm wondering about.
This is a money gig for T. Boone Pickens.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Somewhere you just know that there's something sitting back there in the back that we ain't seen yet, that we're going to find out he's made deals with 20 other people or whatever, you know what I mean? And we're sitting there, if we follow him, we'd be sitting there holding the bag. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but see, a lot of this is about not so much about windmills as it is about natural gas.
Oh.
Out of which T. Boone Pickens stands to make a real fortune. He's also involved in water privatization efforts in the West.
Yeah, that's coming down the pipeline.
And I say, literally. And I saw a reference to an old quote that comes from the West, where it says, you know, whiskey is for drinking, water is for fighting. And the water rights and issue, and you know, McCain really stepped in it a couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw this, Luke, but saying that we needed to renegotiate the water rights compact that affects seven states in the Colorado River Basin. Ken Salazar came out and said that renegotiation would happen over his cold, dead political body, and a former or retiring Republican senator from Colorado said, same here. So, you know, maybe gaffes like that can sway, but those kind of gaffes could sway an election, Luke, but daggummit, somebody in the for-profit media has to be willing to actually talk about it.
Oh, I know. It's like they say, those things. They'll mention the headline, but won't tell you what the story is. It's like, yeah, it's a great headline. Now let's see if there's anything of substance to it. You know, a lot of people say they'll do things. Let's see if they've done something. You know, it's like we always complain. We not complain, but we always talk about Ralph Nader. Nader always come out every 4 years and cry. He's, you know, running for president. It's like, well, Ralph, what you been doing the last 4 years to get people in as congressman or alderman or whatever? So just showing up every 4 years saying you want to be president ain't doing nothing.
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. So.
Well, but I'm going to let you go on and let you get some people on. You all have a good talk, and I'll listen in when I get home.
All right. Sounds good, Luke. You take care. Good to hear from you, brother.
Bye.
Bye now. So that's the first hour. Oh, I'm just getting reminded by our buddy Marty. Isn't Governor Granholm a native-born Canadian? If the above is true, she isn't eligible to run. Well, no, she's just not eligible to ever be president. And that would make, if she is, yeah, that would make it impossible. Yeah, bear in mind the fact that, you know, old 894 was born in Panama. And the Supreme Court says that, or the Bush administration claims that the courts have no jurisdiction over Gitmo, even though it's American soil on Cuba. An American military base, McCain was born in an American military base. McCain should therefore, under the same logic, be ineligible to be president. But, yeah, I get it. A jillion more things to hit as we go into the second hour. A little musical interlude coming. Your thoughts, always welcome. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. 304-658-3333 on your nickel. Email comes to bob@headonradio.com. Any way you want to get in touch, I want you to get in touch. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Coming up on 8 minutes past the hour, hour number two does begin. Some fascinating places to go if you're up for it, not the least of which includes the telephones. And let's do go straightway to the telephones and find out what's happening there. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, this is Juanita.
Hey, Juanita. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Doing pretty good. Looks like Miss Faye doubled back on you.
Yeah, it looks like she's going out toward Peter.
Right.
He in the panhandle?
Yeah, he's in the panhandle. He's toward Tallahassee.
That's where it's going.
Oh, mercy. I hope everything...
It is a loop. Like you wouldn't believe.
And the funny thing is, it's not that strong a storm, but it's dumping a ton of rain. And am I reading things correctly that it's apparently doing tremendous damage to farm crops?
It's very slow. It's moving very slow. That's not good. A guy got the brunt of it. You know, we missed it, changed course, and we missed most of it. You know, we got a lot of rain, but not overly, you know. And not too bad of winds. It's still a little bit that way here because of it's coming back in. But it's going out toward Peter's way.
It is. And, he's not been on the air for the last few nights for a variety of reasons. But, frankly, since he has the world's crappiest internet service provider,
there's no sense in planning to do a show when there's so much as a cloud in the sky, let alone a hurricane.
I was wanted to say a little bit about John.
Please.
As his wife says, she calls him Johnny Boy.
Yeah, we call him old 894.
I don't get that. What does that mean?
Because he was 894th out of a class of 899.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah, old 894.
Okay.
It sounds like a wore-out railroad train. Yeah.
Well, you know what made me mad? I heard yesterday that he's now, you know, he fought against the help to the servicemen for education. Now that it's passed, he's taking credit for it.
Really?
Yeah. I despise that.
No.
I think they're just going to say whatever they want to say.
Right, and, you know, and the for-profit media isn't, you know, it's going to be, you know, this. No, it's not going to be that.
And he was fighting, you know, and now he's saying that he's taking credit for it. Did he even vote on it? Has he even gone back to Congress to vote? I mean, the Senate to vote?
Depends on how you define it. It depends on what the meaning of the word vote is.
Yeah. Yep, I got you. But I nearly got really upset today.
How so?
Well, I was listening to Chuck. Is that how you pronounce the name, Chuck Huber?
Yeah.
And he was upset about Barack Obama, you know, not fighting back enough. And he's really far over, you know, but he tells it like it is. And it was, and he's like me. He doesn't like the idea of I being his vice president. But I just think my heart will sink down to my
I'm not
my heels if he.
Well, that's the whole thing, Juanita, of this supposed short list. Unless this has all just been some sort of a diversionary tactic, and there's really a dynamic vice presidential candidate out there who's going to get named. Not excited about Bi, not excited about Kane. Not excited about that much about Biden, although Biden will at least be interesting.
Like you said, he loves to hear himself talk.
He does. He does indeed. But the point is, what? Oh, doggone it! See, because I care so much about these issues of the attack on small rural Appalachian communities, knowing that Tim Kaine deliberately drove a dagger into the heart of Wise County, Virginia, and forced a coal-fired power plant on them that they did not want.
Uh-huh.
That tells me.
I don't really even know that much about him.
Well, let's see. He is he's a pro-lifer. He was almost a Catholic priest at one point. He does have a good record with organized labor.
Uh-huh.
That goes in the plus column. But he is very much pro coal and has done nothing to slow the onslaught of mountaintop removal in Virginia. So there's not a lot there to get excited about.
No. I just would like a scrapper, and maybe Biden would be. I don't know.
No, I think Biden would be a scrapper. There's no getting around that. But Mark Levine says, hey, it's going to be Kaine. And you know what? When Mark Levine tells me something, about 95% of the time, he's solid.
I heard him, too. The guy was upset about, and you know he's been sure that our guy will win, and now he's not so sure.
I don't think, and this is not this isn't pessimism. I'm never sure that my candidate is going to win.
Well, I don't think he should be, really. You know, like, yeah, I know
Because if you put out that, oh, well, you know, we got this one in the bag. We got this one locked up, you know. But there's a whole bunch of people that go, well, I don't need to, you know, voting's a pain in the butt. I don't need to go out and vote. This one's in the bag. They don't need me.
And, you know, another thing is the way our Congress, our Democrats in Congress and the Senate have been acting, maybe they've turned off a lot of people because they were trying to be so careful so they could win. That's no way to win, is it?
Oh, you mean by going tentatively, by going gingerly, by trying to... No, that's not how to win. That's how to lose.
And that's just what they've done. And that's going to turn a lot of people off, I believe. But what do I know?
Well, no. You know plenty. And the thing is, like I said before, Obama has slid so hard to the right in the last 8 weeks that we need something to get excited about. Tim Kaine is not that.
No. Yeah, we do need somebody to get excited about because we need them.
And, so...
To help us, you know, to fight for us. But if it's just the same old, you know... I was just getting depressed because I thought, my God, we can't take 4 more years. I think somebody wrote in and said 4 more years of Republican rule, especially under John McCain, it's going to be impossible.
That's what they mean to do.
But I thought maybe I better just face facts. And, you know, as far as leaving the country, you can't take now they've got somewhere that you can't take any of your assets with you, especially money, you know, like your pension and stuff like that.
Right, right, right.
I don't know when they started doing that, but so what you going to do?
It's, I don't know. We wait and see either tomorrow or Saturday.
Yeah.
But, again, why is he going to Richmond?
I don't know. Lord of mercy.
Only Nixon could go to China. Maybe Obama. Only Obama can go to Richmond. Who knows?
Who knows?
Well, Juanita, stay dry, and I hope the thing doesn't just sit there and hover over Florida. And
it's going up, but it's going like straight across through Jacksonville.
Yeah, it's.
It went up that high, and you know, turning. It looked like it was going to go into Alabama, but now it looks like it's going to go mostly into Louisiana if it, you know, gets that far.
Yeah, because they need that. They need that. No.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God. And here we are coming up on the Katrina anniversary. You know, I can't get that out of the back of my head.
Yeah.
Well, Juanita, good to hear from you, dear.
Okie doke.
All right. We'll be talking to you.
You know, I hope we get some good news.
I do, too.
We need some good news.
It's about time. Yeah, I could use a little uplift.
Yeah, right.
All right. We'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Take care.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Our pal Juanita down in Central Florida. And let's keep things going. Wrong button. There we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, well, I don't have any good news for you. It's Sandra again.
Darn. But, you know, no good news, but...
Well, no, what are you... So that he's gone to Virginia? Is that the latest?
That's what Mark Levine said in during his show. He said Obama's headed to Richmond tomorrow.
And I just saw an AP report that he's made a statement that he has picked his running mate. That's on the wire.
Nice.
And, I don't know anything about, I have to say, is this the governor of Virginia?
Yes, this is the governor of Virginia. This is the guy who followed Mark Warner. He was Mark Warner's lieutenant governor.
Okay.
And then he acceded to the governor's office when Warner, their term limited there, so Warner couldn't run again, so along comes Tim Kaine.
Well, what is earth-shattering about him? I don't really get it.
Well, he's going to deliver Virginia for the Democrats.
What's that got to do with the rest of the country?
Valid question.
Oh, no, I'm really not. I'm not being facetious.
No, I know you're not. Neither am I. It's a valid question. What is he? What does he do for the ticket?
I think Obama really needs. I mean, I don't. He can't go milk toast. He needs something dramatic.
Well, if you haven't seen Tim Kaine, you haven't seen milk toast.
Oh, is he okay? Am I wrong? Is he excited?
No, you, no. He's exciting the way a test pattern is exciting.
Oh, God, see, that's what I'm saying. It's just like, this is not, okay.
I mean, look, Sandra, the guy really is a pro-lifer. He really, really is a pro-lifer.
Oh, no, are you serious?
Like a heart attack.
Oh, come the hell on. See,
Now, granted, as Mark Levine, if he was with us, he would chime in, but Bob, he doesn't govern that way. He's never introduced any pro-life legislation. But he's personally pro-life, whatever the hell that means.
That's supposed to permeate the huge pro-life movement.
Well, that's going to take the
placating.
Yeah, that's going to take the starch out of the attacks that people like Coulter and Limbaugh have been leveling about how Obama wants to kill babies as long as they've got one foot, one toe left in the womb.
Well, you know, Obama is about to run himself not to the White House at the rate he's going. I'm not understanding the strategy at all.
I mean, there were a lot. Yeah, the sad thing, Sandra, is that at the risk of putting anybody off, I remember feeling this way when Al Gore said, "I got me a vice president, and boy, is he going to be a good one."
Oh, yeah, no, I was really quite appalled with, Lieberman, you know why, even then I couldn't deal with him because of his, you know how he was on that crusade for the indecent music. Remember
yeah.
And I hated him. I shouldn't say hate, Strong. I disliked him then. And, yeah, I wasn't too pleased with that choice for Al Gore either. I hear what you're saying. But I guess we should give him, he hasn't done it yet, but it's just, I don't know what's happening.
But Sandra, the short list is Kane.
And that Bye.
Biden and Evan Bye. And, you know, I think with Evan Bye, you actually have to hold a mirror up to his mouth to make sure he's alive.
Yeah, no, that guy. No, I just am sort of, I was appalled when I even heard anything about Evan Bye because he's just riding on the coattails of his father, isn't he? He's like a nobody, kind of dude.
Yeah, he's a legacy senator.
Right, that's what I'm saying. He's just,
daddy was a senator, and his daddy before him was a senator. And right.
And he doesn't do anything outside of corporate. He's a bit of a corporate toady, I understand.
He is the DLC guy. Okay.
Right, so
the reason he got the consideration is that he is a very dear close friend of the Clintons, or so that's what the conventional wisdom says.
I'm you know, rapidly.
But can we not? I mean, and just, you know, just because I want to check in with somebody that often shares a lot of the same views I have, Sandra, and that's you. Do we progressives, we liberals, you know, the real ones, do we not have a right to at least get a bone thrown to us? Can we have something to get excited about?
No, I am completely, I was talking to a friend of mine last night, I was saying I'm totally getting demoralized by, you know, what this race is turning into because it's not really making any sense what he's doing. And I don't know if you've seen this, but I just saw it, the new update of The One. Have you seen that madness?
No.
It's a new one. They've added him surfing. It's just a nightmare. They've spliced in him surfing.
Oh, you know, all we got to do now is get him into the John Kerry sperm suit, and it's all done.
Or he can go duck hunting. He might as well go that route.
Or he could drive a tank.
Yeah, a tank.
There's tank driving.
All I'm saying is that, and I saw that at the New York Times, The One. That ad. Can you believe it?
Astonishing.
You know, they have it embedded at some blog.
But, you know, here I am, 45 years old, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And granted, you know, I don't get all bothered over even rock and roll stars anymore, okay?
Yeah.
But there is some last little corner of my soul that wants to get excited, that wants to actually believe that somebody wants to make a damn difference. And I guess I'm supposed to think that I'm supposed to feel that way about Barack Obama.
No.
And I'm voting for him, but this whole right wing thing, you know, whether it's the woman, you know, whether it's comments about mental health, not the mental health of the mother not being a viable consideration in whether an abortion should be permitted, or the FISA vote and all that stuff. This whole, you know, oh my God, I'm, you know, help me, I can't stop, I'm sliding to the right. Yeah, all of that. It's demoralizing. It just is.
And not only that, but like I said, I think I've talked to you about it before, but the connection between his FISA stance and the little comments about, you know, privacy issues, you know, that really has me disturbed because, you know, it doesn't take much of a leap to see how losing the Fourth Amendment brings back, you know, coat hangers and whatnot, you know? So, because it's a privacy thing, it's not a choice. I'm sort of sick of that whole canard, too, you know?
Yeah, I've never seen anybody flipping a coin over it.
Well, no, it's just the whole thing. I saw this on a nationwide truck company, Covet or something. They have, it's not a choice, it's a child. This is on this truck that goes down the highway. Have you seen that?
No. It's Yeah, I have. Took me a minute. Yes, I have.
Yeah, I was really, you know, and it's just, you know, I'm driving along, I'm just like, damn, just irritated seeing stuff like this, you know? But I don't mean to digress. I'm sort of just,
But I mean, I've got the email rolling in here, Sandra. I've got the question being put, you know, how about, you know, for Vice President, how about Feingold or Boxer or Gasp, Kucinich?
Yeah, Feingold definitely would be an appreciation for the Constitution. You see what I'm saying? Just a bone, like you said, a bone to us progressives who got his ass where he is now. I don't appreciate it. I'll be honest with you. I'm starting to get real angry about it somewhat.
To the extent it's worth wasting the emotions on.
Well, I know. I mean, yeah.
And I say that because after Mark Levine talking for an hour about all the nasty, sleazy crap the Republicans are still doing with the vote.
Oh, yeah.
Voter caging. In order to win the presidency, Obama has, and I said this a year ago, whether it's Obama or Hillary, in order to win the presidency, the Democratic nominee has to win by like 20 percentage points because inside that, they can and will steal it.
Well, that's the thing, and now this guy is trailing in some instance. I mean, the polls, I guess, are like extremely tight now, right?
What did I see in the last day or so? Obama down 5?
Right, that kind of stuff, and it's just sort of like,
you know, these daily polls now are almost meaningless because you never know which insane people, Gallup or Rasmussen or whoever, are calling that day.
No, and I'm sort of a bit wary of polls anyway, but it's just the mentality that's being fostered with the sort of constant showing that the race is tightening. And meanwhile, this McCain, every other minute he's saying something or doing something that's just out of control, but nothing seems to matter. I don't know. I can't. I know I've already said it, but I can't imagine this fool as president. Please help me.
But we couldn't imagine W as it either. You know what I mean?
Well, especially in 2004, I really thought my head was going to explode.
Yeah, they stole it in 2000, but we'll fix it this time. But again, in all fairness, we put up against George W. Bush, the war president, a man who talked like this. Dynamic John Kerry ain't.
No, and now we have the post-racial black person who's afraid to act black. Hello? You understand what I'm saying?
No, wait a minute. Doggone it. Wait a minute. He plays... No. Yeah.
I know. I probably get some hate emails for that, but I'm sick of it. It's like, come on.
Well, no, I just want to get... Like I said, I'd like to be a little bit inspired.
Well, you know, listen, if he goes, at least if he went black, he'd get some press coverage.
Yeah, but what does that mean? I mean, how do you define that? Because no, I'm not even going to try.
No, I know. I guess, you know, okay, let's just talk in human terms then. If he could just fight back a bit, you see what I'm saying? And not be worried about being called angry or something.
Well, I mean, they did, you know, they got the fight back going with the Jerome Corsi book, and that appears to have worked.
Yeah, that shut them down, but they could be all over this. Are they all over this? I don't know how many homes I have.
Y'all, they've got a beautiful new ad out for that. We'll do a little experiment here because I actually didn't get a chance to preview it. It may be too visual, but let's check out the audio to what they, because our pal Dookie, the webmaster at WD40.com, says, he titled this post where he shows the Obama ad about McCain's houses. Can you say bitch slap?
Okay, great.
Let's try this.
I'm Barack Obama, and I approve this message.
Maybe you're struggling just to pay the mortgage on your home. But recently, John McCain said the fundamentals of our economy are strong. Then again, that same day, when asked how many houses he owns, McCain lost track. He couldn't remember. Well, it's seven. Seven houses. And here's one house America can't afford to let John McCain move into.
Picture of the White House.
Oh, snap. Yeah, okay, that's pretty funny.
Yeah, and there's a graphic on there that says seven houses worth $13 million.
Well, okay, that's all right.
I mean, I'm up for fighting back. I am coldly rational, I'd like to get excited a little bit.
No, I know. Well, you know, I mean, I think that Obama must be, because, I mean, you know, I like Mike Malloy. He made him lose his mind, because now he wants McCain in the White House.
I don't think Mike wants McCain in there, but...
I know.
Yeah, I've heard some of that, and I know a lot of people have come away with that. I don't think that's the thrust of it, but, you know, who am I to interpret?
Oh, well, I know. I think he's talking about having some sort of, you know, majority-proof Senate. I mean, I understand his sentiments because things are dodgy, and I really don't know what.
And this is, you know, and this is a long term philosophical kind of social thing discussion, maybe for another night, Sandra. But when you consider where America is, you can play Lee Greenwood singing, "And I'm proud to be an American. God bless the USA till the cows come home." But you know what? China still holds all the notes. China holds all of George Bush's bad paper. The housing crisis is getting realer by the minute and worse by the minute. You know, oil prices, you know, they're coming down a little bit, but I know what that scam is.
Well, yeah, that's a joke, and the scum sucking commodity stuff is still out of control, and, you know, water's next. No, you're
and
right.
The question is whether it's 8 years of Barack, and if I understand anything correctly, I think this is part and parcel of what, or this is what I got out of what Malloy's been saying. How much can, if FDR rose from the grave, how much could he do? Okay? Because to be fair, FDR did not fix the Depression in two terms, Sandra.
Oh, no, and not only that, if you look at what the conservatives have done, they have locked in these sort of hideous deficits, and they've polluted the bureaucracy with these people who don't believe in it. So there's a lot that's going on that one Democrat is going to have a hard time dealing with, you know.
If Obama wins, he has to start running for reelection, what, on the day after the inauguration?
And not only that, I mean, the get-along, the go-along kind of feel he has about him sometimes doesn't bode well for getting those Bush loyalists out of the bowels of government. I mean, because you know that that's what's gone on. They populated it completely with the Heritage Foundation tied.
And the Patrick Henry School, and, yeah, really.
And these deficits, when he's talking about health care, I just glazed over, because I'm like, you're tripping. How are you going to pay for that?
And yet at the same time, there are discussions worth having, because, you know, I think I said maybe Monday night that I just encourage people to think or to speak or to contemplate these things in these terms. There are simple solutions out there that are available. And that is, this is one of those places where Obama versus McCain makes a real daggum difference. If legislation is passed that allows Americans to freely join a union if they so choose, like the Employees Free Choice Act, if that passes and gets signed into law, If everybody in this country belonged to a union, you know what? The health care crisis goes away, Sandra.
Well, no, and the thing is that you're talking about some pretty drastic changes that could be measured within a year of some implementation of that. You're right. But is that a possibility with Obama, though? I mean, do you think
so? He has come out hard in favor of the Employee Free Choice Act to the point that Walmart is at present browbeating its employees, telling them if they vote for Obama, they won't have a job because they'll have to fire everybody because everybody's going to have to be in a union.
Well, okay, so I know about that law. There's not much room for equivocation. Either you support it or you don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but what it also means is that what it does is it levels the playing field a little bit, and, the boss man, Wayne, can explain this probably better than me, but it basically allows people to sign a card saying, yes, I want to be in the union. Then you count the cards. If it's a majority, boom, it's a union shop. And Target and Walmart and Kmart and all of these retailers scared to death of it. So
why? Because they're going to have to raise some prices a penny or two?
No, because no. This is never about raising prices. I mean, they will raise prices, but it's because they would have to pay their workers a living wage, which then might cut into the bottom line of the Sam Walton heirs, who never had a damn thing to do with building Walmart in the first place. They're just clipping coupons and collecting their billions. Each Walton heir, Sandra, is worth something like $32 billion.
Yeah, and they're one of the main families that donate to repeal this estate tax. I mean, these people are
sure.
Parasites.
Yeah, there ain't no good in them, let's put it that way.
I don't care. I don't care what that sounds like. I just, I can't deal with that level of wealth and, how damaging it's been, because for Walmart to be trying to force their workers to vote for McCain is like some sort of bad nightmare.
But the problem with it ain't a nightmare. It is a potential reality.
And so you're saying that these people will actually pay attention to what those predators are telling them?
You're struggling to get your mortgage payments made. You need to get some service work done on the car, but you can't afford it. Walmart has taught you how to at least access the welfare system so that you can get your kids' health care and maybe some food stamp help that you then spend at Walmart. And they get to pull, because of the way the labor laws are written, they get to pull you into a meeting that you can't leave. You go to one of these, you get called into one of these anti-union meetings at Walmart, you literally cannot get up and go to the bathroom without permission. All right? And they can sit there and browbeat you for 2 hours, 3 hours. There is no limit to it. And yeah, you're gonna come out of there, and it don't matter how liberal you are, if you're gonna lose your house, and you're gonna lose everything, and you and the kids are gonna be living under the bridge, if you vote for Obama, guess which way you're voting?
Wow, that's just, the whole thing is just stunning. Because I know that they were closing stores if any unions succeeded to pop up. Isn't that their tactic too?
Meat Cutters Union organized at a store in Texas, and this was back in the 90s, and as a result of that, and they managed to succeed, as a result of that, Walmart eliminated all meat cutting operations at every single one of its stores. A Walmart store in Quebec voted to go union in Canada. Walmart left Quebec.
Yeah, well, they got unions in China now, though.
Yeah, well, they've had unions in Walmart in China for eons.
Hmm. Well, so, I know they left Germany, too. They didn't deal with that one either.
Right.
Well, anyway,
okay.
I'll let you go. I just sort of...
Well, I appreciate you calling back. I hate it when we lose the call the first time through.
My cheap phone, man. Cheap phone. Anyway.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. All right, bye.
Take care, Sandra. Bye now. Our buddy Sandra. Let's see. Let's keep it rolling. Got a few lit up here. If you're on hold, please stay that way. For heaven's sakes, we'll get there as quickly as possible. You left. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Alan.
It's hard to follow that last call. She's pretty good.
Oh, Sandra's amazing. But everybody is. Yeah. Don't say that it's hard for you to follow because you do, you know, you've always got something wonderful to bring to the program as well.
Oh, thanks. She mentioned that Covenant Transportation. I have talked to people who work for that company, and it is pretty bad. They treat their employees pretty bad.
Oh, but they'd be really nice to fetuses, wouldn't they?
I talked to one employee. He said, I can't believe my wife taught me into joining this company. He said, it's supposed to be a Christian company. And then they're trying to cheat them out of money all the time.
Sure.
Walmart treats their employees.
But that's, you know, that's the way it is with the right-wing religious hustle. You know, the prosperity gospel. You know, it's for the people at the top to get rich, and it's for the people at the bottom to make them rich and hope that it's like Amway. It's like a pyramid scheme.
Yeah. Amway must be pretty right-wing, too, aren't they?
I'm not sure. I don't think they don't even call themselves Amway in America anymore. I saw some TV commercial where they rebranded themselves. But, yeah.
Y'all were talking about Walmart earlier. I was thinking as you were talking about Walmart Airs that they only pay, like, I think 15% on their taxes they make on dividends.
Oh, yeah. Their effective tax rate is what? 13 to 15%.
Okay. And then the employees pay, like, 30%. Some guy driving a truck pays 30%.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the clearest example of it is Warren Buffett. And Warren Buffett reminds us all every year. He says, my secretary pays a higher tax rate than I do. And it's true. And then he goes on and says, there is a class war in this country. And let me tell you, my class is winning. That's Warren Buffett, you know, Berkshire Hathaway, richest man in America, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you ever mentioned union in China, but this sounds like the union in China is really government-controlled.
Sure it is. Everything is. And the idea that we would still call China communist is laughable, because what you have is a marriage of corporate principles with the machine of government, and the last I checked, that meets the definition of fascism.
Yeah, so China is really a fascist country now.
The People's Republic of China is a fascist dictatorship.
And the United States is getting that way, too.
Quicker than I think any one of us would like to admit. Been getting any painting done, Alan?
Not too much. It's just all this political crap. I wish I could get away from it sometimes. You can't run from it, can you?
No, you can't, and I don't necessarily think that we should. You just got to take a breath once in a while.
I know. It's like painting and politics is just two different ways of thinking. It's hard to get in one mode and away from the other.
It is. It is indeed.
Yeah.
You still in Carolina?
Yeah, Saluda, North Carolina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just talking to one of the neighbors around here. He's talking about Obama. He knows I'm an Obama fan, and he's a right winger.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a section of Hendersonville, North Carolina. I was telling him about a great restaurant there, and he said, "Oh, that's an Obama neighborhood." This happens to be a neighborhood with a lot of blacks.
Oh God! Oh.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Oh.
And then later on, that's what I was
talking about with Sandra, Alan. There's sometimes I look up and I say, you know, this country can't be saved. Because every time some of us try to help save the country, there's a whole bunch of more people that want to. No, I enjoy jabbing sharpened pencils into my eyes. I mean, you see what I. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wonder how low we could go.
We're going to find out by November. Because it's already pretty doggone ugly. And the thing is, we haven't even seen ugly yet. Ugly is going to start around Labor Day weekend in Minneapolis, St. Paul, when the Repiglicans get together for their clavern or whatever they call it.
Yeah, I get this feeling after the Republican Party get together, they're going to start putting the negative ads. Probably from, Obama when he went to that religious program the other day.
Yeah, you will.
They changed the questions on him.
Mm-hmm. Well, you won't be able to turn a television on from Labor Day until Election Day without seeing some sort of an Obama smear every 5.8 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
That
was very low down the way they did him.
But everything they do is low down, Alan. That's how they operate. This is, you know, the Republican Party is a gutter political party.
Yeah.
That's where they operate.
The main reason we can't fight back is because of the media, the way I understand. Is that right?
Between media ownership and the fact that the so-called for-profit media is busy doing covering McCain's butt with every breath, sure. Well, you know, they said it. It's documented. You know, so what if he can't remember how many mansions he owns? Who can?
Oh, shoot.
Yeah.
Like, most people are just, even Republicans are so poor now, that they look at something like that and be disgusted.
Well, you know, let them go ahead and vote for McCain, these Republicans. They're feeling the press, too. You know, there's actually very few... 500,000, the people who make above $250,000 in this country every year, that is less than 1% of the population, okay? Let the rest of the people who, you know, have everyday so-called middle class or working class lives, let them go ahead and vote Republican, those registered Republicans. And then, you know, and like the Bible says, somewhere along the way in the middle of the first McCain term, they'll be hollering, Lord, Lord. But there ain't going to be nobody there to hear him.
Maybe they'll finally find out what an Antichrist is.
Yeah, no kidding. Hey, Alan, good to hear from you, brother.
Okay, thank you.
You take care. We'll talk soon, all right? Bye now.
Bye.
And we'll keep it rolling along. Let's keep it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, what's going on? Not much, man. You know the problem with... The people on the left, the progressives like yourself and other people. You know what the main problem is, Bob?
What is?
Mike Malloy. You know what the problem is?
What is it?
Here's the problem where I see it. The people on the left need to be true believers. Until November 2nd. Then after November 2nd, become unbelievers very quickly. Because Republicans are going to bring so much stuff up that anything less than that kind of commitment is not going to win at the White House. If we sit back, and I'm not saying we shouldn't argue about what our candidate is doing, I mean, on any of the radio shows, but at some point, you need to get focused on getting our candidate in, and I'm getting kind of like, A little kind of like, I don't want to say ticked off, but, and you know, not towards you or.
No, you're frustrated. It's okay to say you're frustrated.
No, I'm kind of frustrated. And I know that you guys on the left, I'm not on the left, so I mean, I'm going to be very clear about this. As far as the left is maybe you and Mike, and I'm definitely not as far as Mike is. I'm more close to.
Well, I don't think I'm on the left either. I really, really don't.
Well, I don't know.
I don't.
Practically defined, they probably would say you're on the left.
I'm not out here singing the Internationale or hollering, workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains. I want people to be able to make their mortgage payments, buy a new car once in a while when they need one. I'd like them to have interest rates that are affordable. I'd like them
Bob, that's the left.
Dang.
Not center anymore.
Well, what's the center now?
The center, what's the center? The center is stupidity. That's the center of America. In the other side, when you start to drift from the center, you go to the right wing, that's the craziness. See, stupidity, craziness, the left. And I'm saying that I'm somewhat more closer, obviously, to the left. I'm not all the way to the left, but I'm talking about going socialism. But the center is stupidity. That is what Obama has to appeal to right now. And that's what I just think. I'm just kind of getting frustrated that people, again, not that you are aiming at people on the left, don't realize that what he has to appeal to a certain amount of just plain stupidity in this country. I mean, just that's how it is. The policies don't make any sense, you know, and I think people think the center is It's something rational, but it's not. It's stupidity. Everything now that's progressive and right for the country is to the left. It's just that I think we have some people on the left who tend to forget that the people in the center are actually stupid, too. That's my, again, this is my.
Gary, I got to tell you, that scares me to pieces on a couple of on a couple of different levels, because, one, while I agree with you, I do, I know from empirical evidence that that gets us slammed as elitists, okay? I want to share something with you real quick, if I may, all right? I go and I read Alternet. You ever go there? Alternet.org, there's some good articles there, and, you know, there's some decent blog commenting and people talking to each other and stuff. So there was this article about, you know, it was called A Working Guide to That Other Convention in Denver. Okay, talking about the Stars green room and the big tent and all of that stuff. And so down thread, it's not a long thread, somebody posts and says, leave it to Alternet's editor not to mention at all Recreate 68. Now, we talked about Recreate 68 at length last Friday. And the guy says, join with Recreate 68 and protest this fraud, the Democratic Party of Republican enablers. Or alternatively, vote Barack Obama and still get John McCain, for that's about what will happen with your vote. And I read that, and I'll be honest, Gary, that got me a little bit bent. So I wrote back and I said, which party does Recreate 68 represent? I said, I'm not snarking. I really want to know what will happen with your vote. And so I said the following. The consensus, I said, the very name itself belies a lack of understanding of the room temperature IQ of the American voter. Recreate 68 carries a ton of negativity and bad energy. And I said, from the standpoint of those who will make their judgments in 2.5396 seconds, i.e. most of the electorate, Recreate 68 means you want full-on riots, police with truncheons, tear gas, and senseless violence, which will in turn enable John McCain, who will then finish the overall screwing of this once great nation. Is that what you want? Does Recreate 68 espouse principles of nonviolence? I'd like to know. So you know what I got in the way of a response, Gary?
What?
I got this guy writing back at me, doesn't answer any of my questions about are you nonviolent, doesn't answer any of my questions about what party are you, doesn't answer any of the questions I put forward. He just says, exactly why does your party deserve mass support when it has public backers that say things like the room temperature IQ of the American voter and from the standpoint of those who will make their judgments in 2.5396 seconds, most of the electorate. It doesn't sound to me like you're going for broad popular support. What it sounds like is, you're stupid, vote for my party. Now, I've been in a voting booth a few times, and so have you, Gary. How long, if you stand there in line, how long does it take the average voter to go in, cast their ballot, and come out?
10 minutes minimum, 20 minutes max.
And that's on a full ballot, right? I mean, that's from president all the way down to county surveyor.
Yeah, but if they have like these, you know, they have like provisions and other stuff on the ballot.
Initiatives, constitutional amendments.
Yeah, I can take a little long, because if you really read them, we just want to go through them, then you'd be pushing 35, 40. If that's the max, you're going to do it.
So per candidate, per election, per race, not a lot of time. And I don't know a lot of people who go into the ballot booth or voting booth and actually sit there and agonize over who they're going to vote for. Have you ever met any of those people? I mean, don't most people know who they're voting for by election day?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much, you know, get a lot of people going to vote down, break down a ticket.
Right, but if people don't know who they're voting for on election day, isn't that a rather sad commentary on them and not the process?
It's kind of sometimes hard for me to blame them because of the media.
No, I'm not talking about blame or anything, but
yeah.
I mean, no, I'm trying to get at something deeper. We do have, and it's, you know, you said the center is stupid. And I said that, and I got called down by a guy who wants to protest in Denver. You know, good on him. Hooray. Congratulations. I went and read it, Recreate 68, and
a lot of their stuff makes sense to me. Mm-hmm. You know, the sickness with empire and tired of Democrats who enable Republicans and things like that. You going to get an argument out of me? No.
Well, you know, it's just like there had been a while back when that African group protested Obama at some rally. They jumped up with these signs. And, you know, they were, you know, talking, you know, like saying he wasn't addressing the black community in a proper manner or something like that. But then Obama turned around and said, well, did you know that I was one of the first people to, you know, in Illinois to help, you know, in terms of, like, you know, racial profiling. And he just did a couple things that he did as a legislator to help improve the situations of young black men in the community. And the guy was kind of like, well, I didn't know that. And it really didn't take a lot for that guy to probably go and look up that record of his to say, hey, you know what? This guy may be okay. He's in a situation, a systematic situation that's corrupt. He has to do some things to get through that system. But then let me say, did I look at that person like the whole core of him and say, this guy, there's something good about this guy. I got a good feeling about this guy. I've seen what he's saying that kind of agrees with me. And I kind of agree with some of the stuff he's done in his own life. And to say, hey, you know what? This is the guy I'm going to be excited about and this guy I'm going to vote for. I think if people kind of put those three little things together like that and look at a person that way as opposed to just getting caught up in some fanciful stuff and actually do a little bit of research, not a lot, just a little bit, like that guy should have done just on Obama, just his record on those types of things, he may have not gotten this thing to come up to his campaign rally with a bunch of signs. I mean, he did all this effort to come up with these signs and hadn't even read, you know, anything about them, hard things like to me, because that's information that you can easily find on Obama. So that's where I kind of, like, get kind of weird with people, because I kind of got feeling that people are just yapping off at the mouth based on emotions, and that's why I kind of got mad. I wasn't like...
No. But see, I tried to preface my comments earlier by saying, you know, I'm 45, I'm a grown-up, I understand political reality very, very well, and yet even I find myself yearning for something to get excited about.
Well, you know, I heard you say that, and I'm thinking, I would look at it this way, Bob, because I kind of like look at it a little differently. I'm looking at this, and I figure a lot of people that I meet, I'm talking to, you know, because I am working out with the Democratic Party in terms of some volunteer stuff, and, you know, people saying, well, we need the motivation, we need a vice president taking all that stuff. And I keep talking to him, I said, man, you want some motivation? You need to have George Bush's picture on your bathroom wall and put 08 on it and 012. Put McCain right next to him. And when you wash your face in the morning, you look at that picture. If that don't give you no motivation to get out and do stuff to get our Democratic person elected, then I don't know what the problem is. You know what I mean?
I do understand. I understand you completely from that standpoint, Gary. However,
that's what I'm saying. That's our mindset. We need to get to that mindset. Right now, we're kind of going like, well, does this candidate have everything I want? And that's just not going to happen. We don't.
No. You know, that's what I tried to say to the people, the folks who were so pissed off over Hillary. You know, there ain't no perfect candidate. I understand
that. You said that to me. Remember when I was going off and saying I would vote for her because of the racial crap, but you told me think about the Supreme Court.
Right.
I sat back 2 or 3 days later and thought, you know, Bob is right. So I'm throwing it right back at you.
And you know what? Maybe I deserve it because this is serious. I try to approach politics fairly calmly and fairly rationally.
No, man, we got to become true believers for November. I'm sorry.
Well, okay, but can I defend myself a little bit, please? Tim Kaine, because what is happening in Appalachia matters so much to me. My children's future literally hinges on it. Getting an unabashed coal whore in the number two spot is bothersome. Because that guy really is a heartbeat away from the presidency. And we have had 8 years of that already.
He hasn't picked anybody yet.
No, but the conventional wisdom is that it's Tim Kaine. Why else, again, like Mark Levine said in the 5 o'clock hour, why else is he flying to Richmond tomorrow?
Yeah, well, I said out of the three, I've always said it would be Tim Kaine because the reason why, you know, I'm here in Maryland, the one thing I've noticed, and I've been looking at this election for a while, I just kind of look at numbers and stuff, because I'm kind of like into numbers, I believe in numbers and stuff like that, is that he wins Virginia, he wins the election. And that And a lot of people have not been talking about that. But the thing
is, that's the same thing Mark said.
Exactly. That's what, and I'm telling you, you know, I'm not trying to be no prophet or anything, but when a lot of stuff that I looked at this election with this primary and all those stuff, it's kind, and I kind of feel like I have a good read on what's going on. And so I'm not saying.
No, I think you do too. But the question I ask, Gary, is if I'm sitting here and, you know, I'm the rational one, you know, I've never said, and you will not catch me saying, between now and November that there's anything going to happen on November 2nd, that I'm going to go in and I'm going to vote for Barack Obama. Okay. I have not backed off that. I'm staying with it. I'm standing by it. But with an avowed pro-lifer on the second slot of the ticket, what's that going to do to the people at NOW and NARAL? You know, whole bunch of women really, really committed to, and it's not even reproductive rights. It is essential the rights to make healthcare decisions for one's own body.
Yeah.
You know, these are basic, to me, these are basic civil rights issues. What's that going to do to them? You know, how, and I think, you know, what you mentioned, that the frustration that you're hearing elsewhere is exactly what I'm talking about. At what point in time do we stop, what you're hearing, and I'm sorry, I'm doing a terrible job at this, what you're hearing is a whole lot of really committed, liberal, good, progressive people saying that they are sick and tired of being taken for granted. That they're tired of candidates saying, well, you know, vote for me because, you know, look who the other side is. And I went and voted for John Kerry in November 2004 on exactly that platform. I didn't vote for John Kerry. I voted against George Bush. Because John Kerry was about as exciting as chewing cardboard. I mean, does this make any sense?
Yeah. And
I mean, I'm going and I'm voting, but I certainly can't speak for a lot of other groups that now are pretty frustrated.
But I understand that. But I think, again, I would say that people really aren't looking at, I mean, let me put it this way. The country is such, I just don't think people got a sense of it, but the country is so diverse because what the Republicans have done is basically put their cronies in certain places, try to destroy the American government. They're robbing the treasury. There's so much stuff going on that we cannot, at this point, we got to get somebody back in there who's at least going to first put a functioning government back in proper place. And that's going to be a hard magnitude. But if anybody right now has the capital, it looks like Barack Obama could do it because there is a strong youth movement and a progressive movement behind him. He's going to move to the left when he gets in office. I'm pretty 100% sure about that. That's just my opinion from reading him, just looking at some of his past moves. That is why Sean Hannity and all these other people, they're just not freaking out. They really think this guy is not going to be a Clinton. They think he's really going to move almost to socialism. So when they go into all these rants, I think people think they're hyperventilating. The corporations are very scared of him, and that's why Walmart and all these other places are freaking out. So what I'm saying is that this is maybe just a situation, man, where we have to say, look, I feel very passionate about this issue. He may pick a governor that I don't like, or he may do one, two or three things. Maybe the five or things doesn't hurt me. But in the end, John McCain must be stopped. That's it. We can sit here and we can complain about these little issues all we want to. I don't want to say little issues, the big issues. But in the end, the entire house of cards falls if McCain gets in office. That's just how it is. Because you can forget about, every issue that you mentioned. We're going to be drilling for oil. We're going to be having a war with Russia. We're going to, you know, probably going back to 1957, kind of like a front of action program. The whole country is going to go backwards. So, I mean, I was just really.
But, Gary, do we have a right to ask on those issues that you just mentioned? Do we have a right to ask for an equivocal statement before we go to the polls? That Obama is not going to do that? I mean, how about
the problem with that, Bob, I've been listening to a couple of shows.
Well, they'll beat him to death. They'll he's soft on national security. He's soft on the Russians. Oh, I've been to this movie.
If well, I mean, that, do I is that right? I mean, do I read him right?
I would just say to all the blanket all of this is that we just have to be true believers in that. That's just how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I think that
and by the way, Sandra's participating in this discussion too. I just got an email from her, Gary.
Oh, okay.
And she's got a question.
Okay.
And you take a run at this. She says, how long are we supposed to give Obama or any other so-called progressive types permission to pretend to be right-wing and then do what? Hope they turn into FDR when they get into the White House? She says, I'm not buying that Obama has to do whatever to get elected. If we can't hold him accountable when running, how the hell do we expect him to be accountable when he's president?
Well, see, and I would say to her is that, I would say to her, just a person who has kind of been, you know, kind of somewhat familiar and worked with DNC and other things, that, again, we have a lot of people in the center in our organization. If you notice, and I said this to you before, and I can tell you, I'm telling you this stuff from personal people I know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically what has happened, and I know some Hillary people don't want to hear this, but he's taken some advice, unfortunately, from some of the people that he brought into the organization, and that's when he started moving to the center. That's where the center move started to come from, because they're telling him, hey, you know, you want to get our people, whatever. They believe in these kind of issues. They're a little bit more to the center. Because if you think about it, and I tell this all the time, you know, and my people tell me it's true, Obama started moving to the center. He did it because after the thing was over. It's like, no, because he absorbed some of her people. He hired her staff.
Well, why do you think, you know, again, why do you think Evan Bayh wound up on the short list for vice president? I mean, that's pure and simple DLC.
Exactly. But again, I would say that we have to say, I would say to her is, Obama will be the head of his administration, and he even said today, which is a signal. He says, "I want to get somebody who will challenge me." He said, "Challenge." So he's basically saying, "I'm gonna pick somebody who don't agree with me, or whatever."
Well, that's not Tim Kaine.
Well, my point being is that I think what he's trying to let people know is that he's making the decisions. If he's going to the left, the people in the organization...
Oh, wait a minute. Maybe that is Tim Kaine, because there's Tim Kaine pro-lifer, right? Avowed pro-lifer, and that establishes Obama as decidedly pro-choice. Is that it?
He can. It gives him cover for himself for now until he gets in there, but that doesn't mean that Tim Kaine or somebody else is going to tell him to move to the left. I mean, from what I've seen and he's pretty headstrong about he's going to do things what he believes is right, and he's not going to be too much bully. He'll do it for an election, probably. But I think in the administration, I would say I wouldn't too much be overly that concerned that he's just going to flop with the wind. He has his own ideas of what he wants to do and what he wants to do with his country. And I'm not buying that he's going to be some guy who's going to get in the lake out at that point. I think right now he's just kind of, you know, just kind of filling out the winds and how which way to go. And I would say also, Sandra, because I know she said something about the polls and the media. I think we have to be very careful that we don't watch the media, because the media right now is clearly trying to bend this thing up into a horse race. And the polls...
Oh, they want a 2%. They want a... Ultimately, they want polls that are within the margin of error.
Yeah, exactly. Obama's right where he's supposed to be. When I started thinking about this, I said, the most worst thing Obama could be would be 10, 20 points ahead, because then you would see all hell break loose from the Republican side and from the media to bring him down. As long as he keeps it close, his end game is what counts.
You know what's going to be, just from an irony or humor standpoint, Gary, you know what's going to be funny? He's going to pack 75,000 people into Mile High Stadium. And they're going to be very excited people.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember being excited in the Atlanta convention in '88, and that was Michael Dukakis, okay? He's going to have 75,000 really excited people in that stadium. And the next day, you know what the for-profit media is going to say? No bounce. No convention bounce. And I say that by way of agreeing with you and suggesting that you may be more right than even you're prepared to acknowledge, that because the for-profit media is, like I said earlier, has become a wholly owned subsidiary of McCain for President, Inc.
They're obsessed with Obama. You can turn on Hardball, any show. I watched a little bit of tonight. Today, I mean, it just came on. After the first 30 minutes before I called, I just watched it. They talked about Obama. It was like almost like 80% of the points were about Obama. And they do it every day, every night. McCain has no energy. He's going to lose the election, barring one caveat. If we don't stay focused on getting Obama elected and if we allow the media to, because I see this happening. I see people, progressives, like, well, I'm not motivated now. And I think a little bit is some of the issues that Obama has lost. I think he probably didn't have moved on Pfizer. But I think what's happening, too, we got to be very careful that we don't allow the media to trick us. And I don't really watch it that much anymore. I'll tip in a little here and there. But I see that they're trying to fix this thing, man. And that's the only thing I'm kind of concerned about, that too many of us may get caught up in this media thing, or too many people who are just coming on board, they're going to be still watching gender polls or these things. Say, oh, well, what's wrong with Obama? Why isn't he 20 points ahead? Why should Obama be 20 points ahead? He's the first black man to run for president. He had 2 years in the Senate, and McCain's been there forever, and everybody's known him. Why should Obama be 20 points ahead? This is how the media has tricked everyone.
And that's what I was trying to get at the top of the show, Gary. This idea, if ever there was a moment, I mean, if ever Barack Obama was handed a gift on a silver platter, it's John McCain saying he's okay with bringing back the draft. You know, we talked, you and I did, about all the new blood that came into the campaign, young people that were very excited. Well, good. Now there's a reason for them to go beyond excited into highly motivated.
Yeah.
Because you know what? They're not going to draft me. They're not going to draft you. They're going to draft some college sophomore who's, you know, in the marketing and business information technology department, strap a pack on his back, put an M16 in his hand, and send him off to some damn desert or godforsaken jungle or frozen tundra wasteland. And you know what? I'll do everything in my power. You'll do everything in your power to prevent that war from happening. But it is a guarantee that another one of those will happen with old 894 in the White House. I don't have any. Again, that's another reason for me to go and vote for Obama. But you know what? I need those 18 to 28 year olds to get real worked up about that, because it's their bacon that's getting ready to fry.
Well, the media is going to, unfortunately, I hate to say it, I think the media is going to, their whole goal is to demotivate everything. They're going to suck a lot of the life out of his organization. He's going to have to try to figure out some way to get around that. But I would say this one piece of irony in all of this, Bob, is this. If you remember, McCain said, I think about 2 or 3 weeks ago, that Obama was willing to lose a war to get elected. I think, did you hear that comment that McCain made about Obama?
Yeah. Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Here's the irony. McCain was willing to start a war with Russia to get elected.
Okay, you're drawing your own questions now, Gary. I tell you what, okay, this comes in from Cossack. He says, please remind Gary, Bubba Clinton ran and won as a Southern populist and remained so for about 5 seconds after the election. In second six, he was handed the spreadsheets showing him that Reagan Bush had run us so terribly deep in debt that there literally wasn't a penny left for his populist programs. And this is the question for you. He says, what makes Gary think that Obama, who has always been a centrist corporate candidate, will suddenly come to an epiphany and become the second coming of FDR?
I would say this, and I can ask this question pretty quickly. Obama's thing has always been talking about self-involvement, self-empowerment. And I can say the person, again, I work with the Democrat people and some people, a lot of Obama people. This is what's going on. And you know this, Bob. Basically, they want to take the organization they've built right now, this network of individuals or whatever, and turn this into an entirely progressive movement past the election. If you see when he speaks and he talks about us getting involved and whatever, that's what he's talking about. He's talking about change from the grassroots stuff. He believes in it. When he started with his community organization, that's what he saw. He saw you needed not only the community organization, you need to get people together. other. But he also said he needed the government from the top.
Yes, I get that part.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So he's not necessarily told, it's not just about having enough money to get a lot of these programs in place. That does help. But it's also, he's talking about bringing it from the bottom up. So in other words, people would be more more organized to find, figure out more innovative ways to get things done and just not necessarily rely on the government. Now, some people may say, that sounds like whatever. It sounds like a little bit what the Republicans are saying or some other kind of stuff. But actually, it is a functioning way to work considering what he's going into. Because there's not going to be enough cash to fix everything. A lot of this stuff does have to be fixed on a local level. And that's just what's going to happen. That's why we got to get more progressive people.
And I also think that that plays into his avowed support for the Employee Free Choice Act. Because I think, if I've figured this out, surely to God Barack Obama has, that things like a broad base of union membership will solve problems that government won't have to solve then. Namely, for starters, health care. You said, and then you can work on issues of preventative medicine, early education, stuff like that. You can use government money on that, but people are actually being insured by virtue of their employment. They're paying for it, and it just makes abundant sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I think like when he was talking about the whole pump up your tires thing, he was just talking like that. I mean, that was just like something thrown out, but it's kind of funny because in a sense, it is about using every kind of little bit of thing we can do. And I think that's what we're going to need. We're going to need the government to change some of its policies, but also me and you, I'm going to have to get out maybe and hit the sidewalk a little more.
And you know what? I find you want to talk about getting motivated and getting excited or getting determined. We've talked in past shows about the old football analogy of bulletin board material. You know, when the other side says, well, you know, they don't belong on the same field with us. We'll stomp their guts out on Saturday. And the opposing coach puts that up on the bulletin board where every player can see it.
Yeah.
And it's a motivator. I hope that the Obama team can take as bulletin board material or motivational material this latest sleazy business from Rush Limbaugh.
I can tell you one thing that's happening whenever they go on these broad attacks and people say, why did he come out swinging? I mentioned to this last time. I noticed pretty much well now is that he starts to get a flood of cash whenever they feel like he's being abused by the media or whatever. If that's what happened in the
Then I wish, with your permission, I will play a little bit of audio here, Gary.
Okay.
I sincerely hope. Frankly, I'd be fine if the Obama campaign would just run this as part of an ad. This is from the Limbaugh show 2 days ago, and it's stunning.
Here, I'm actually idling at my daughter's air on full blast, so I'm going to take my time. She says to say hi.
Okay,
but
let me move forward.
For more.
No, they understand it. They just oppose.
They do not hesitate to drill for more.
No, they understand it. They just oppose it.
Okay, but they want it when it benefits them.
Exactly right.
Okay.
So when a precious resource like racism becomes
exactly.
scarce, they will go out and drill for new sources.
Okay.
You're exactly right. They understand the principle. They want it for themselves, just not everybody. Liberals are going to have two sets of rules. One for the elites, the arrogants, and the condescending elites, and the other set of rules for everybody else. They will exempt themselves from the limiting rules they place on everybody else.
Yes. And you hit it right on with Barack. They keep talking about all these reasons. Why is it the poll so close? What's going on? And it reminds
Let's
me of
run
that,
forward
that
just
scene
a
in
little
Caddyshack.
Bit.
I don't
because
know if you're familiar with
here we go.
Unqualified. Obama is, and how this whole thing came about within the Democrat Party. And I think it really goes back to the fact that nobody had the guts to stand up and say no to a black guy. They were liberal policies are always going to end up strangling liberals, too. And I think this is a classic illustration here where affirmative action has reared its ugly head.
How's that?
Yeah, man.
Now, here's a guy, Barack Obama, good student, brilliantly graduated, highly educated, but he only got it because of affirmative action, and he's running for president with the Democratic nomination because nobody had the guts to stand up and say no to a black guy. Now, bear with me for just a minute, Gary, but unless I've been living in an alternate universe, isn't pretty much the history of the United States about people saying no to black guys? I mean, I'm just asking.
Pretty much. I think that's what we're
doing. I mean, no, you can't sit at this lunch counter. No, you can't vote. No, you can't marry.
You can't hit the baseball. You can't.
Yeah.
You can't golf. You can't walk down the street.
Can't wave at the white women. I mean, there's a whole lot of no there.
You can't go to our fake Christian churches. Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah.
I
can't go to our schools.
Yeah, man. This whole election will be very interesting because this really is, me and my friends, we talk about it all the time. We kind of love it. We want Obama to win because we say he's the best person and everything else. But we also say, and I hear a lot of people say, it's like, then we'll know. They keep saying that. Now we'll, I don't have to tell you what that means to us. But it says, okay, then we'll know. We'll know where they really stand. Are they really about doing all the things they say they are, or is it all about the living of this whole illusion of white supremacy? Or is it all about a certain a lie that everybody wants to live in? So that's what a lot of us, particularly people of African America, we see that the guy is qualified. We see McCain graduated, fifth from the bottom of his class.
Old 894.
Privileged. Has 18 houses, probably. Obama just barely got one after he sold some books, and he's in debt. But yet he's the elitist, So it's like the sickness.
Well, that's another thing. I see this the stuff coming from the so-called Democrats who are anti-Obama, the Puma people or whatever. And every time they refer to the house that Barack Obama lives in Chicago, they refer to it as the mansion that Obama purchased. You ever seen a picture of it?
Yeah, I saw something like, that's his house? I was like, it's not really that impressive.
That's a mansion? In Chicago, that qualifies as a mansion? I mean, I grew up in Alabama, and that's a house on the street.
Yeah, that's like, when I saw it, I was kind of surprised. But I said, I was thinking to myself, I said, he didn't break me. I think he, they were talking about, I think Rush Limbaugh was saying that, he had some shady land deal. And I'm like, no, the way that house looks, I think it's the deal he got.
I mean, I'll be honest. Around here, we define old houses because the real estate agent will say, oh, you're going to love this place. It's a cute little fixer-upper. Yeah. And you get out and you get a look at it and you go, the hell it is. That's a cute little burner-downer. Yeah.
I don't want to make sure people, anybody, listening stuff that, I mean, I was offending anybody who thinks they're in the center and calling them stupid. What my point was trying to make, I was just using that language to be provocative, but my point being is that it's not necessarily that they're dumb because they don't have the mind capacity, but it's more that the media has not been giving us the right information.
And that is why we talk about the dumbing down of the American people.
Yeah. It's not Americans are just dumb. It's just, we're probably one of the most innovative. We are the most innovative country, in the world. And we do a lot of innovative things, and everybody follows our lead. But what has happened over the last 20, 30 years since Reagan is that America is systematically being dumbed down.
And that's why I was asking that question about how much time does it take inside a voting booth. Because more Americans vote for the American idol than vote for the president.
Okay. Well, when you said polling booth, I was kind of projecting out that you meant, how long does it take to go actually vote? But actually in the booth, I would probably bring those numbers down a little bit from what I quoted.
I mean, I sit and I read everything, and I'm still out in 5 minutes. But then again, I've studied it all, and there aren't many questions left by the time I walk in. But more American skull sweat more American discussion time is spent comparing the relative merits of the last two contenders in American Idol than most Americans spend discussing the merits of the presidential candidates, because most people make their minds up right away. And then the media creates this phony baloney myth of the undecided voter. And frankly, if you get to October and you still haven't made your mind up, sorry, I'm a hillbilly elitist. There's something wrong with you.
Well, first of all, a lot of people have made their mind up. I can tell you, I was in Pennsylvania. They've already made their mind up. They're not voting for any Republicans. They say they may not vote for Obama, but a lot of people I talk to, a lot of Republicans, say they're just not going to show up.
There were numbers that were sent to me earlier today, Gary, that indicate that only 52% of Hillary supporters say they will, in fact, vote for Barack Obama. I think 27% said that they will vote for McCain, and 23% or 21% said they're just not sure yet.
So you got to knock those numbers down, because the question is probably rigged. It's probably about 10 points overall on each question.
Right.
More than likely either way, to get the real actual number.
Yeah. Well, Gary, it's been a great conversation as usual.
All right, man.
All right, we'll talk to you later.
All right. John.
Thanks. Bye. And we've got a little discussion going on here. Let's see what happens next. Well, everybody bailed out. Someday, the call screener. Not to screen your calls or make sure that what you say is okay, but just so that I won't have to sit here and wonder which one's a busy signal. This is Conversation Radio, folks. You will get your turn. But you got to be a little bit patient. If you don't, we don't run people off the air here. People get their say. A couple of things before we do move on, in case the phone rings again. I made a promise Monday evening that I did not keep, because I got all mixed up in the progress of the show, and I want to make sure that I do this. If you've been in the chat room, you've met listener Broadus. Broadus asked us to make mention of something that is coming up on the Labor Day weekend, which is when the Repiglicans will be in the Twin Cities. Take Back Labor Day Festival. Wow, does this sound fun. World-class music, cutting-edge activism, family fun to put working Americans' concerns on the national agenda in a whole new way. And the whole thing happens just across the Mississippi River from the Repiglican National Convention. It opens on the same day, September 1st. The Take Back Labor Day Festival combines all of those things, the music, the activism, the family fun, and will involve topics like health care for all, the freedom to join unions, wages that can support families, in other words, living wages, dignified, secure retirements. There's going to be concerts, the ability to record YouTube videos, play area for kids, SEIU, the Service Employees International Union's Mobile Action Center, will be there for folks to make calls, and there will be direct action about health care and a variety of other issues. TakeBackLaborDay.com is the website, TakeBackLaborDay.com. If you're going to be around there, sure sounds a heck of a lot more fun than being at the Con-Con, the Clavern, or whatever it is that the Repiglicans are going to be holding over there. Oh, we're really Americans, and we're scared of Obama. And let's just follow up one little minute with Flush Flimball. Now, I don't like focusing on this pig any more than you like me focusing on him. But dadgummit, there is something to be said for knowing what the other side is up to and knowing how low they're willing to stoop. Flush Flimball, because he has profound sexually related issues himself, why did he have to sneak off to the Dominican Republic with a prescription for Viagra that was in his doctor's name on what was admittedly an all-boys weekend? And what is the Dominican Republic known for? Underage sexual trafficking. Rush Limbaugh has problems that probably would put
put any psychiatrist's entire family through all the way through medical school. And being that is the case, Flush Flimball, day before yesterday, as I noted, started this business with Barack Obama. My friends, it's Barack Obama's candidacy happened because no one would say no to the black guy. It's affirmative action rearing its ugly head. Right? Right. So we go from there to what went down yesterday. And this is what Flimball does. You know, he builds on themes, and he says something hateful and nasty one day, and the next day he builds on it, making it a little bit more hateful and a little bit more nasty. Okay? So building on the idea of Barack Obama is the affirmative action candidate, he then has to emasculate him. Remember how he called John Edwards the Breck girl? Well, now he's feminizing Barack Obama. Just listen and try to keep dinner down.
Quickly, LA Times poll. More striking, however, is the drop in Obama's favorable rating. Obama's favorable rating has slid from 59% to 48% since June. At the same time, his negative rating has risen from 27 to 35%. The bulk of that shift stems from Republicans souring on Obama amid ferocious attacks on the Democrat by McCain and his allies.
Now, wait, here it comes. You know what the theme song of the Repiglican National Party should be? Poor, poor, pitiful me. You know the song, right? Because they're so put upon, the Repiglicans. This is going to be that same old, tired, worn out business about how it's the liberal media, right? Yeah, here it comes. You know I wouldn't lie to you.
That's it. See, they're Democrats. The drive-bys are just so upset with these so-called ferocious attacks. These have been benign. Even the Britney Spears Paris Hilton ad was funny. It was benign.
Yeah, because, you know, Flush, you racist damn dog, you. It's always funny when we try to create the impression that the black man's going to get our white women's. That's real funny. I bet you have just a laugh riot when they put the torch to that kerosene-soaked cross, don't you, Flush? You vile pig. But there's more. It's a Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more.
Obama's patriotism not being attacked in an ad, McCain?
Right, yeah, it's not being attacked in an ad, so I'm going to do it now. Or his sexuality or something.
He's just out there saying he's putting his own personal political ambition ahead of the countries. It's just we can't hit the girl. I don't care.
Bang! We can't hit the girl. He literally just called Barack Obama a girl. Was it only 4 years ago about this time that Arnold Schwarzenegger stood on the stage at the Repiglican National Convention in New York and called John Kerry a girly man? Don't be a girly man. Remember that? I remember that. Of course, by Christmas, all was made up between the two, and John Kerry and Arnold Schwarzenegger spent Christmas dinner together at Sun Valley in Idaho after John Kerry had left the field in the fight for Ohio with $45 million remaining in his campaign war chest. You know, we need a new law that the losing presidential candidate has to turn over his war chest to the next nominee. How's that sound? I kind of like that. But anyway, back to the emasculation, feminization of Barack Obama.
How far feminism's taken? You can't hit the girl, and you can't criticize the little black man child. You just can't do it because this is not. Oh!
You heard it. You can't hit the girl, and you can't criticize the little black man child.
Flush, phlegm ball, you vomitous, the little black man-child. You realize why I had to call him a man-child, don't you? You realize, come on, it's code. You better learn the code, or you're not going to understand what the other side is saying. You understand what little black man-child means, don't you? It's a lot, it's a little bit more of a mouthful, but little black man-child. That's just a long encoded phrase that means boy. And anybody who has ever lived for more than 24 hours south of the Mason-Dixie line understands the freight that that otherwise innocuous little three-letter word carries. You can't criticize the little black man-child. Why?
Right, it's not fair. He's such a victim.
He's such a victim. You know, there's no point to it. Because corporate America is, you could protest. Premier Radio Networks wants you to write in and tell them what a sleaze bucket this deviant sexual predator is. They want you to do that. They want the emails, too. And guess what? The corporate America that buys advertising on his stinking, dirty little program, they love him. Because it's okay with them. Corporate America, whether it's some orange juice sales outlet or steel buildings or vacuum cleaners picking up bowling balls or whatever kind of stupid crap is being advertised on Flush's show now, they know what he does, and they want to be on that program. They want the code-listening right wing to hear that, you know, a great big corporation of America is intimately involved with a man who refers to a man of African descent as boy. Little black man-child. Of course, there's another phrase that goes with little and black. I hate knowing this crap. I just hate knowing this crap. We've got 20 minutes left in the program. I don't know who's still listening, but I want to know if you know the other racist phrase, the word that follows little and black, that was used as a racial stereotype in this country for eons. Do you know it? Man-child means boy. What does little black mean? See, this is the right-wing racist version of a Sertz commercial. It's two racial smears in one. With a hint of Retsin. The hell's Retsin? There are literally embedded, this is like the racist version of Where's Waldo? Any right-winger, any right-wing gas bag, you listen, you'll hear it if you have been exposed to it, and if you are paying attention to it, and if you're watching for it, and you know what it's designed to do. It's to bring that element out and make sure they get to the voting booth so that they can use the polling place as a means of expressing racism, bigotry, and hateful centuries-long prejudice. You want a motivator? I, by God, am motivated. Because, you know, when I will at least feel that way. When I go to the polling place, I will know that I am standing up against millions of damn Klansmen in this country. And that will make me proud. To know that I have done so. Yeah, there you go, News Ninja Gene. That's another one, but that's not what it is. Man-child equals boy. Little black, and there's a word that comes after it. Come on, don't make me do this. I mean, good God, you've got Pat Buchanan running around. You've got Pat Buchanan appearing on a right-wing radio show it's called the Political Cesspool Radio Show. Their statement of principle says that it represents a philosophy that is pro-white. Hello? Yeah. And MSNBC? MSNBC hearing the news that one of their mainline commentators is hanging out on pro-white radio shows? Yeah. Hear the crickets? Thanks, Pat Buchanan. But, you know, seeing Pat Buchanan turn up on a pro-white radio show is not exactly shocking. But what I'm trying to point out here is that this is morphing into a full-on assault. Because it all ties together. Again, it is code. It is code. You're not supposed to know what it means. If you're listening to this program, you know. And there it is. Sambo, damn it. Two emails. You know, and they both came, and I won't put anybody's name to it. They both came from people who live in the culture, who have been exposed to it. So let's take this the next step. So we've got Rush Limbaugh referencing two of the most hated racist, bigoted terms of the 18th and 19th and 20th centuries in such a way as to make sure that nobody who isn't paying attention doesn't know that it's happening. So let's move over to Neil Bortz. Nice guy, that Neil. He's on after some. Well, it's the same old Reagan-esque trash. Just hear it.
Two stories right here, I think, gives us an idea of what, you know, life in this world and life in the United States is going to be like for our children. The first story.
This is life under an Obama presidency, by the way.
In Georgia, as well as, I dare say, most other states in the nation, the least or the less you can afford to have a child, the more likely it is you're going to have one.
But, of course, this creep is a right-winger, and we got to remember all the fetuses are sacred. It's after they're born. But never mind me.
In Georgia, welfare broodmares, that is also described as single mothers receiving public assistance, are having babies at three times the rate of mothers who do not need public assistance. If you're on welfare, 162 births per 1,000 women. If you're not on welfare, 53 births per 1,000 women. 3-1. 3-1. And then on a world basis,
there you go. Welfare broodmares. Welfare broodmares. Ladies, now that you know what, because the welfare modifies broodmare, but broodmare stands alone. Broodmare, that's what right-winger Neil Bortz thinks of women. Again, just like if I was to use that word that John McCain used on his beer heiress wife, if I was to use that word on Agnes, I would not walk very much further. You know, the one that begins with a C. Same thing with broodmare. Broodmare. Gee, Neil, why don't you just go ahead and call them whelping bitches? It's just the name of a female dog, after all. I mean, a mare is just a female horse. And these are the people who speak on behalf of the right wing? And they actually manage to win elections? Woo! And this is, Jesus, this is August the 21st. The fun hasn't even started yet. This is what they've got for an appetizer. This is the stuff you pick up with the shrimp fork. We haven't gotten the stuff that comes in on a trencher and that you shovel out with a big old spoon. This is just the warm-up. And all I can say is it would be wise to take note and, you know, gird up your loins and put on the armor of righteousness and all of that stuff. Because as I keep saying, it's only going to get uglier. School's about to start. It's already started in some parts of the country. So, naturally, while some of the right wing is attacking Barack Obama's masculinity, and another part of the right wing is attacking women who just can't help but have that there sex, dirty old women's, another part of the right wing marching orders involves attacking who? Yeah, teachers. Now, this is a second-tier creep named Mark Belling. He frequently fills in for Flush Flimball. And he doesn't like the nasty, nasty teachers. And he doesn't like the nasty, nasty environmentalists. So here's a way to work the two together.
So the people who want to believe so badly that somehow we're burning the planet up and we're going to say, look at this, 22, we've never had anything like this, 22 days of... Do you think that they even are aware that up here in the upper Midwest, we've been freezing our butts off all summer? No. They don't know that. Now, I do believe that
Does this guy sound like he needs his adenoids taken out or something? No, they don't know that. We've freezing our butts off up here in the upper Midwest. See, my nose is all red, and I'm wearing a sweater because it's so cold.
Leaders of the global warming movement have figured out that there's something wrong with their thesis. That's why they've changed, and I was one of the first to pick up on this, that's why they've changed the language to climate change. Now, anything that changes, if it's sunny one day and rains the next, somehow it's man's fault. Planet cools off, man is doing it. Planet warms up, man is doing it. Planet does nothing, man is doing it. Everything is...
Now, of course, those are simplifications that have no basis whatsoever in the accepted science or the problems that the planet faces. But, you know, he's talking to right-wingers, so it doesn't have to have any basis in fact. It doesn't even have to be remotely related to reality. What it does, however, is it provides a convenient springboard for him to hate somebody else.
Going to be because of human activity. So they're gradually repositioning themselves away from this global warming. As every successive year goes by, that shows no increase in warming whatsoever. Here are the people that are the victims of this. Do you know who the victims are? You don't. Yes, school kids. The absolute most adamant people on global warming are kids. They go...
And who poisoned the kids' minds? Wait, this has layers and layers and layers. This is just, this is a perfect parfait of right-wing hate.
Go into these classrooms and they have their idiot union teachers standing up and...
Bingo! Idiot union teachers! What are the idiot union teachers doing?
Victims are... You don't. Yes, school kids. The absolute most adamant people on global warming are kids. They go into these classrooms and they have their idiot union teacher standing up in front of them, giving them all this crapola about global warming. They show them the stupid Al Gore movie that shows the oceans overrunning the beach in Miami. They see all of this stuff, and they therefore presume that their teacher's telling them the truth. They've learned things in school. Now go back to when you were in school. George Washington's the president, the North beat the South in the Civil War, you learn certain things. You just presume that what they were telling you was true, and by and large it was true. You didn't see any particular reason why the teacher would lie to you. 9 times 7 equals 7, 63. Well, they turned out that...
Good God, he almost blew the multiplication. Then I probably shouldn't say anything because I'm not real good at math either. But come on, these are right-wingers. They tell us all the time that they're smarter than us. And, you know, you learned this in school.
They were right about that. So these kids are presuming that what they're getting is gospel. They are presuming that they don't have an ideological kook in front of them. They presume that they have a committed educator who is presenting facts rather than some liberal unionized hack that's presenting a pile of...
Good God, liberal unionized hack? When do we get to the ball batting the kneecaps part? I mean, this is so tiresome.
Garbage that's being tossed out there by a failed politician. So these kids...
Wait, this is the worst part. What about the children? What about the children, Mark Belling?
Are going to end up when they realize that global warming was all a scam. And they learned it, you know, they learned it at school, they so deeply believed, they're going to end up with an incredible distrust of everything. That's not all.
The next thing you know, they'll be out there smoking the marijuana. Yes, sir. It'll lead to involvement in drugs. That's what global warming do, once they find out that we've been lying to them about the global warming. Might as well finish this.
Well, bad. Anytime we can break someone's trust in a greedy, overpaid, unionized school teacher, that's a good thing rather than a bad thing.
A greedy, overpaid, unionized school teacher. Moments like this, I wish I could get one of my kids' teachers on the phones. We're friends with a couple of them. Greedy, overpaid, unionized school teachers. Now, we have two teachers' representation organizations here in the state of West Virginia, for instance. I'm not talking about Wisconsin. There is the West Virginia Education Association, which is sort of like a social club you can join. Or there is the American Federation of Teachers, which is a real live, honest to God union under the umbrella of the American Federation of Labor, Congress of Industrial Organizations, commonly known as the AFL-CIO. They're a real union. But I guarantee you that if I got either a WVEA teacher or an AFT teacher on this program and played that for them, the first thing we'd have to do is make sure that the person standing next to them was there to peel them off the ceiling. Greedy, overpaid, unionized school teacher. Well, when you go into a position with a starting salary of around $18,000 a year, using greedy to describe that person, no, I don't think that word's going to get it. Overpaid? Greedy and overpaid? Are we sure he wasn't that he wasn't talking about American corporate CEOs who buy $15,000 gold umbrella stands and $10,000 shower curtains? Are we sure he wasn't? Because that's greedy and overpaid in my book. On the other hand, one of these women, one of these men, who literally go into their own pockets to buy school supplies that the state government that's been strapped by tax cuts for America, been strapped by that and is constantly have a sword over their heads because of stupidities like no child's behind left. They go into their own pockets to buy markers and glue sticks and staplers and construction paper and poster board. Greedy, overpaid, unionized teachers do that. Yeah, that little freak is one of those people that makes it really challenging not to use some of the fun words. But that is the show for this evening. Awfully glad to be back. And Peter Godbold, like I said, has a hurricane sitting over his head right now, so no show tonight. We will, however, have a horn section and an All Foxed Up coming after the rerun of Peter's July the 2nd program. I hope you enjoy it. Thank you to everyone who went and helped push the Coal River Wind petition over 3,800 signatures. Tell more people. Let's get it to 10,000. CoalRiverWind.org. Of course, all of the programs on the horn are partially sponsored by our, well, the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. Alongside you who contribute to keep the horn going, without you and without Coal River Mountain Watch, the horn's over. And so, you know, the dedication of everyone to keeping this going is so inspiring. You've no idea. Thank you to those of you who have stepped up recently to make your first contribution to keeping the horn going. Thank you to those of you who continue to step up every month to keep the horn going. Thank you to those of you who may not be able to financially contribute, but try to tell others about what's going on here and engage them in the conversation as well. Thank you to our moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, our bloggers. Thank you to Peter Godbold and John Fox. And to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, who almost single-handedly saved liberal talk on the internet via WhiteRoseSociety.org. And always, 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 RMR, Gina. It's all for you.